This is HPR episode 1674 entitled, New Year Show Part 1 of 8. It is hosted by HPR volunteers, and is about 214 minutes long. The summary is, the first 4 hours of the 2014 to 2015 New Year Show.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Right on. Well, thanks, man. I can't stay long. I have to go to work, actually. But I wanted to stop in and say hello to whoever was here and wish everybody a Happy New Year. And I should be back.
I presume everyone's going to start in shortly, so shouldn't be a problem. And when we normally the first ones here.
Yeah, well, we're just a minute off from the first Happy New Year official one, I believe. I believe it's the first one.
What's that? It must be, can't be too far away from us.
Oh, I don't know. It's, I think it's just listed as etc. and GMT minus 14 and GMT plus 14 on my world clock. I'm not exactly sure who it is.
Hey, the Chatham Islands get New Year's first. Would be somewhere around here, I'd say.
Well, according to my list, it's Christmas Island.
Oh, yeah, it'd be one of the islands somewhere.
Well, right on, here it comes in 2 seconds, or none seconds. Happy New Year, Christmas Island.
Happy New Year.
Howdy, folks. This is 5150 for Hacker Public Radio. Here to kick off our end of 2014, and welcome to 2015 New Year's Extravaganza. For the next 26 and more hours, we will be welcoming each new time zone into the new year as we welcome old friends, new tech, music, movies, sci-fi, free software, food, and free love into a new and powerful generation. We will welcome guests, insights, and the free-flowing exchange of ideas. As the new year dawns, we welcome Christmas Island, Kiribati, and Samoa, Kiribati, Apia, and other locations into the new year. At this time, I would like to welcome the other Hacker Public Radio participants into the channel.
Holy smokes, 5150. Did you write that yourself? That was excellent. Well done, my friend.
Well, thanks. Yes, I did. Now, I've misplaced my mumble wheel, and I have to go find it.
Well, I'm Pokey, and unfortunately, I got to head out in just a couple of minutes, but I wanted to be here at the kickoff, and I'll come back after work in about 8 or 10 hours.
Work sounds like fun there, Pokey.
Sub Covert 2, my good buddy, how's things north of the border?
Got chilly since last night.
Oh, yeah, it's tis the season. Also, Marcus Baird is here. What's up, Marcus?
That's correct. And it's pouring with rain, and it's actually a wet New Year's Eve here in New Zealand, and it's also supposed to be summer. So we're actually not having a very good summer at the moment. But it's okay. You have to be positive about these things, don't you?
Well, it's also okay because you're New Zealand. What a more beautiful place to live than that. That's excellent. That appears to be all the participants who are not muted, the four of us. But yeah, I don't know about you guys, but I'm thrilled to be here and thrilled that HBR pulled it together again. This is unprecedented. It's outstanding.
Yeah, sorry, 51. There's a bit of a lag in me being in New Zealand, so sorry if I interrupt. I think Velcro is going to join us from Scotland shortly. I'm not sure if he's idle, but I was talking to him earlier. And I think there might be some people coming in at some certain times.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Dude Man was going to join us. In fact, I may pop down there to the lounge and see if they want to come in.
Your audio just got a bit better there, 5150. You're still, it sounds like you're way far from your mic and potted up too high, I think is what might be going on. But that's just a guess.
Well, I saw the mic back in a little bit. How's that?
It's getting better. It's getting less echoey. But no, it's cool. So anyway, I just wanted to say Happy New Year's to you guys and have a great day. And I'm gonna head out and I'll be back in a bit. But thanks everyone for showing up and being there for me to say Happy New Year's to.
Well, it's not Happy New Year yet, Pokey, but we'll see you in about 10.
Oh, I know what it is. I'm not hearing my audio through my headset. I'm hearing through the PC speaker.
That's just typical of you, 50.
You guys all have radio voices. I'm like a shocking radio voice. I can't do the deep radio voice.
No, you're fine until you get excited and talk too fast for anybody to understand. You sound good.
I think Kiwis just talk fast anyway for Americans, I think. I'll try and talk slower.
There you go. Slower. I heard a Kiwi on another podcast yesterday, and he did not talk fast, and I wonder if maybe he's just trained himself to talk slower so we could all understand him.
I think it depends on what part of the country you come from. I think the people from Auckland and above, they do tend to speak a little bit slower, but it's also how used you are to the New Zealand accent as well.
Love of God, Pokey, don't tell Marcus to talk slower. We'll have a 25-hour after show.
I think I was here for about 15 hours of it last time, plus we went for another 5 on top after you guys finished.
No, I went to bed and woke back up and people were still talking.
That was quite a big crowd last year. Hopefully everyone comes back. If they're still talking to me, I think I've annoyed a few of them this year. I lose track.
All right, guys. Well, that's it for me for a bit anyway. So take it easy. Good luck and have a great time.
We'll see you, Pokey. Have fun.
Yeah, no response down there from Lounge. I forgot to stop recording. I'm going to screw up the recording if I jump rooms. So those guys don't seem to be hearing me. So I'm assuming they're probably away from their microphones.
Something's wrong with your mic, dude.
Still, I finally got where I'm not, where I can hear you in my headset.
Well, that's good. It's just, I don't know. It's really hissy and feedbacky. What quality settings you running?
All the way to the top.
Yeah, I put the quality settings down a bit. I don't really change that too much. I find if you're up too much or fiddle around with the settings, that sometimes it can be a bit wonky. You guys probably have really flashy mics, so you probably don't need to do that.
Oh, yeah.
I've upgraded my mic from last year. I've actually bought I went from my $20 webcam one to a $70 on this one, New Zealand, so it should be a bit more advanced.
Yeah, unfortunately, I lost my good equipment, but this is a fairly expensive headset. But I've never had very good luck with it. I think I've had better luck with my analog, but people complain about that. Everybody says I sound better on the phone, but just for utility right now, I thought it would be better to be on the PC.
I never have too much trouble with the mic, so I do find, though, that if you do, as I said, I think some people play around with settings and stuff, and sometimes they can overthink it. I never overthink things. That's part of the reason the Linux community don't like me too much at the moment. But no, I very much don't overthink things, and I just leave it on default normally and hope for the best.
Well, I put the quality about back where they were before I thought about, oh, I've got all kinds of bandwidth now. I can set everything to high. So does that make a bit of difference? It's probably this headset's just a piece of junk. Also, I'm in a square room, so everything is going to tend to echo.
I'm in a square room as well, actually. I've actually got door open outside, so... but yeah, I don't know. Some people are different with their sound. It's very hard to get the sound just right on microphones.
It sounds more like you just need to stick a sock over the end of it, man.
Oh, like a hiss filter, yeah. Something like that might help.
Actually, I'm buying a laptop soon. I'm going to get I'm spending $1,000 on a laptop New Zealand, which is about, what, $600 American, and I'm going to go and buy try and get an i7 8GB RAM laptop, I think. Got one mind I want to buy. What would you guys recommend?
Just 8 gigs of RAM?
Yeah, well, It's quite expensive here for laptops. I was having a conversation with Valcro earlier. He's from Scotland. But I have got a desktop at the moment, but desktops have just gone out of fashion. It's really hard to actually even build a desktop now. The parts are too expensive, like just a normal graphics card or, motherboard. It's too expensive now. It's cheaper to actually just go and get a cheap $600-$700 laptop. So, I am seriously considering getting there's HP one, which I'm looking at, which is $1,000, but it's got an NVIDIA graphics card in it, and it's got 8GB RAM and an i7 processor, which will get a lot better fit than the desktop I've got at the moment. So, I don't need a lot of RAM. It's more the processor speed. If you do a lot of videos, it tends to be the processor speed that you tend to need, which I'm struggling with.
Wouldn't you want to go more for AMD since you're doing video?
The AMDs are cheaper, but I've heard bad things from AMD, and I don't really understand what the AMD processors are. There tends to be just numbers, and at least with Intel, I know what I'm getting. Like if you've never had an AMD before, it's quite hard to work out what's what in the laptop market. I'll give a link to the desktop. I know the listeners, if there's any listeners, won't understand what I'm going, but you guys bound to give you guys a link about what I'm looking at if I find it.
How's that? Is that any better?
Much better.
You're very filtered and very quiet.
You know what happened? When I went to bed for a few hours, I left Mumble running and I left Pulse Audio Volume Control running, but I turned the toggle off on the headsets. It's rechargeable. I didn't want it to run down. And when I came back, of course, since it had been turned off, Pulse Audio Volume Control had reset everything to the internal speaker and internal microphone on the PC. So that's why when you first heard me talking, I was just shouting into the built-in microphone on the PC.
Well, you probably need to raise your audio up. Your mic volume up.
You do sound much better, though.
Yeah, I turned the amp down when you guys said I was blasting you out of there, so let me go back and put it back where it was.
Are desktops still quite cheap in the state, Cooper? Like, if you want to build one, like, are the parts quite cheap?
I'm in good old Canada, but the last desktop I built was a HTPC about 2 years ago, and not counting the hard drives, I spent $450 on it.
See, that'd be about what I spent on mine New Zealand-wise 2 years ago, because I spent about $800, because it's about 60 cents on the dollar, I think. But I didn't get a very good CPU. I got the Intel chip before the i3, so it's not that powerful, but I did get 8GB of RAM, and I got a low-end NVIDIA graphics card. I didn't get a lot for what I wanted, but as I said, that's just quite expensive over here.
Well, I got an Intel Atom. I run a fanless system, and it's the Atom D520, which is like a 1.16 gigahertz dual core Atom, and then I got 4 gigs of RAM and an NVIDIA Ion for graphics.
Yeah, see, I went for the 8GB, but I think I should have probably just got, at least I've got an i5 more than anything, so I think I've probably stuffed up there. And the prices have skyrocketed for the parts since, as I said, it's just cheaper to get a laptop these days. But I see what happens. I mean, I'm doing a course this year. I'm doing a graphic design course this year. I'm out of work at the moment, so I thought I'd go and do a 6-month course, and I need a laptop for that. So that's why it's actually looking at just buying a laptop. But yeah, I've been looking at some of the YouTube reviews on that and on the graphics, and it's not too bad. So I think I'd do it fine.
Well, unless you're building a gaming PC or a silent one like Cobra talking about, at least over here, you just can't build yourself a PC as cheap as you can go out and buy one from Dell or HP or whatever.
Well, that's HP. I think it's HP. There's a couple of Toshiba ones they've got. I might just actually order this one online. I normally don't do that, but I might actually go and just pay for it cash and just get it online. But I normally don't have that sort of cash, but I do for this. I'm just thinking, I just want something that's going to last me 4 or 5 years. All the touch screens coming in here. So you've got touch screen, you know, computers for about $2,000. So they're getting rid of all their old stock. What I'm worried about is what happens next year when they're all touch screens, and then you can't, you know, the cheapest computer you're going to be able to get around here for laptops is going to be $1,200. And that's sort of why I'm thinking, well, I'll just get one of these now, and that'll last me for a while, because I don't need a touch screen.
Do you need a CD-ROM drive?
Not really, no. I haven't used my CD-ROM drive. I just used a flash drive. I don't need anything. If anything, you need USB ports these days.
Well, if you don't need that, I'd look into Ultrabooks. You'll wind up saving a couple bucks, and it'll be lighter, and generally your battery will last longer. And if you replace the hard drive with an SSD, you got a huge performance upgrade.
Yeah, actually, I think these guys have got Ultrabooks there. I haven't checked what they've actually got. Yeah, I get confused with the Chromebooks, the Ultrabooks, and everything else, like the Netbooks. And I mean, I must admit, I haven't actually spent a lot of time around laptops. I'm more a desktop sort of guy, so I've always had desktops. So I know parts quite well, but when it comes to laptops, I'm pretty much a no, you know.
All right, well, let me give you some naming conventions really quick. You know what the Acer Aspire 1 is, right?
Yeah, I do know that.
All right, that's a netbook. Everything that doesn't have a CD-ROM drive is a netbook. But for marketing purposes, I think it was Microsoft decided to sell a more expensive license to computers without CD-ROM drives, and they had to call them Ultrabooks, not netbooks, because of the licensing. And anything that has a screen that's larger than 10.1 inches and a keyboard is an Ultrabook. Anything smaller than that's a netbook. So that's the terminology for there.
I had no idea on that. There you go. I always wondered, this is one of those things you don't really look up.
Brand you might want to play around with, Asus, Acer, and Lenovo.
I do like the Acer laptops. Actually, they've got a couple of Asuses here. Hold on.
I've got Acer V7 series, and I've only got an i5 in mine, but I get really decent battery life out of it. It's actually what I'm on right now. I replaced the 500 gig hard drive with a 120 gig SSD, and it came with another 24 gig SSD on the mini PCI slot. I think that's what it is. And I just use that for my OS booting and the other SSD for quick storage.
That doesn't look too bad, actually. I just looked at there's pretty 4 different stores here, but I'm just looking, they've pretty much all got the same stuff. That one, actually, when you see Acer, that actually looks quite good. I can upgrade the RAM in that for $100. Get a lot cheaper, actually, than the one I've actually got that I was looking at.
Hey, guys, it looks like Ken's got something he wants to say, an announcement. So he wants a moment of quietness from us. Okay, Ken, we already did at the top of the hour the greetings to the time zone. I'm not sure what you want. We do want to mention DistroWatch Weekly is looking for a new podcaster to do that podcast, and also, you know, if anybody's listening later in the day, if you can help me out by signing up to pick up our slots for the HPR volunteer, basically your only duties are going to be to be in the channel and listen, and make sure that either the Etherpad or my schedule that what's being talked about is updated to form show notes. So I'm trying to think what else Ken might have been talking about, because the 10:15, yes, greeting to Chatham Islands and New Zealand. I'm sorry, I missed that one, Ken.
New Zealand's still about 4 minutes away.
I was looking right at it. I was looking at it and said, no, next until the top of the hour, but then there is. So what part of that of New Zealand would that be, Marcus, that's 15 minutes off everybody else?
Chatham Islands, is it?
That's what it says. Chatham Islands is part of New Zealand?
Yeah, it is, I believe.
Okay, well, welcome 5 minutes late to the New Year Chatham Islands.
Good job, 50. Already screwing it up.
Did we stuff that one up? Actually, I'm not sure. We Chatham Islands are about quite a way to the east of us, so I'm not sure how far out they actually would be.
So I'm going to take this opportunity to make some coffee.
So that's interesting. I can almost understand being 30 minutes off, but what's the point of being 15 minutes off everybody else?
I have no idea. I'm looking them up on Wikipedia as you speak. Apparently 680 kilometers away from New Zealand, so they probably do have a bit of a time difference going on.
Yeah, but even so, you would think if they're, you know, if their trading partner or whoever they're doing business with, routinely is mainland New Zealand, for want of a better term, I would just think that would just mess up your communication. Of course, probably it's been hundreds of years like that, and they're probably a little stubborn about changing.
Yeah, apparently they've been, Wikipedia, apparently they've been part of New Zealand since 1842. Here you go. And the Chatham Islands are made up of 10 different islands, which is quite amazing.
Well, that's interesting. Well, this has come up on the New Year's show before, right? It's kind of like daylight savings time. A lot of people want to abandon that, and I'm sort of coming around to this idea that maybe we should all be on one time zone, and then everybody just should adjust for when their day starts, so that we don't have to do all these mental gymnastics talking to each other across the globe.
The daylight savings thing is annoying. When we change, Australia hasn't changed, and they have 2 or 3 time zones over there. And then America, you're talking to people in America, and their time zone hasn't changed. And then 2 or 3 weeks later, it does change, and one changes again. It's like really freaking confusing. Really difficult trying to work out what time it is in the US most days if you've your time zone's just changed by now, forward or back.
I know poor Peter 64. He never knows what time it is when the time zones change.
I have the same trouble with Europe as well. Like, I talked to Velcro quite a bit, who's down in the lounge, and he's in Scotland, and they're exactly 13 hours behind us. But when they have daylight savings, they go to 12, and then a week later we go up as well, and then we lose an hour or whatever, and then it goes back to 11 hours. So it's quite confusing. You never know if it's 1 hour, 11 hours or 13 hours half the time. Actually, Canada is quite hard to work out. I talked to quite a few people in Canada, and they're really hard to work out their time zones. You guys have quite a few people in quite a few time zones in Canada, don't you?
Yeah, there's a ton up here.
You guys got at least one more than we do, because you stick out farther to the east.
Oh, there's at least 2 more further to the east, because there's the one I'm in, which is Atlantic time, and then there's one that's further over, and it's only over by 30 minutes, and that's Newfoundland and Labrador. Or the Rock, as people call it around here.
What's your IRC? I always forget your IRC. Are you on Freenode or are you on one of the other servers?
I'm on Freenode.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
Allcast Planet.
What's the time in the States at the moment? It's quite early in the morning, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like 5:30.
Okay.
Eastern.
Yeah, 4:30 Central.
Did we get many Australians in here last time? Because they're 2 hours behind us. And if you're in Perth, they're actually 5 hours behind us. So I noticed last time you guys were doing this, they tended to come in about 3 or 4 hours later after I showed up.
Oh, I'm sure Peter 64 will be kicking around.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised to see Crayon or some of the rest of them show up. Well, I don't know. I hope Crayon's still. I keep seeing him on IRC. I haven't talked to him in over a year.
Yeah, I've been a bit dormant with the IRC most of this year. I've been in and out. I really haven't been paying much attention to any of the IRC channels, to be honest.
Yeah, I've been pretty good with IRC this year. I think I logged in 4 times, including the New Year show.
Well, that's why we're so excited to see you, Cobra.
Quit pulling my leg.
Sorry for the name change too this year. To be honest, I'm just trying to find a brand. It's really hard to come up with something to be proactive about, and that's half my trouble. I just get frustrated trying to talk about one thing. I just like to talk about everything.
Well, that maybe you should do that, because you seem to start a lot of projects, and a couple weeks later, it morphs into something else.
Yeah, I think I've just got too many ideas. I can't, like, it's really hard. I have something, you know, get something going on, and then I want to do tech. I want to do, talk about sci-fi shows. And then I want to do something else, and I can't really be the tech guy or whatever I am at the time if I'm talking about sci-fi shows, so I change my name. And then I get frustrated with that. So I don't know. I'm not really after a following, though. It's always something to do for me. I think that's what people need to realize. It's not like I'm trying to get 20,000 subscribers and do a drama show on freaking YouTube.
Well, pick a name, stick with it, then say you're going to talk about everything.
Yeah, well, that's really what I would like to talk about.
Well, look at Linux Outlaws. I got tired of being pigeonholed where, you know, if a Linux story comes up this week, we have to talk about it. They're going to do something else where if they want to talk about Linux, they'll do that. If they want, I guess, maybe talk about politics and media and all that sort of stuff, too. So, though, I don't know. It never seemed to stop them before. It certainly doesn't stop Tilts from not talking about Linux. So, I don't know why change the name of the show. But I'm going to be interested to see what they come up with.
Yeah, I mean, it's really... I mean, I know Chris Fisher's done a lot of different shows, like Unplugged. I think Angela's doing one now called Woman in Tech or something. And I pop in there occasionally, but I'm still welcome there, I think. But, I haven't. I think he's just done a lot of different shows with different titles. There's different ways of doing it, but I don't really want to create 10 different channels to do 10 different topics. You know, I think you should just be allowed to talk about what you want to talk about. Unless you guys being Hacker Pub Radio, you can really just talk about anything.
There you go. Just put all your shows on HPR.
Might have to start hanging out in your chat room anyway.
No, you don't got to do that.
Well, I mean, that's a great thing about HPR, that you don't have to do a weekly show or a bi-weekly show. If you want to do 6 episodes a year or something like that, then it's just fine, and you don't have to worry about arranging the hosting and finding an audience and all that kind of stuff. So, it's the perfect fit for just so many people out there.
Yeah, see, I've thought about that too. Like, I'm honestly, I'm on loan a little bit. It's really hard to get into that niche group and actually be welcome in a group. But also too, a lot of people just talk about one specific topic. I think I've got better though over the last 12 months. I think I'm getting to the point where I actually could be in a podcast and do it okay without saying I'm a lot, which I'm trying to stop. And be a bit funny, and you know, be that funny guy on the podcast that doesn't have that radio voice but still gets a point across. So I don't know, it's just a matter of finding that niche. I mean I'd love to do something with someone. It's just a matter of finding that right fit, really.
Oh yeah, it's a lot easier, I think, to bounce your ideas off someone than to just sit there and talk in the specs by yourself.
I started watching, The Last Ship was one show I liked this year, and there was this guy doing a podcast on The Last Ship, the TV show, but I sort of thought, well, if he had someone to do that with, he'd be really good. But it's really hard to actually do that on your own and bounce ideas when you're actually talking to yourself. It's quite hard to actually do that. So it's pretty much why I haven't actually done a podcast, because, and say I'm again. It's so frustrating doing that, because you know what your problems are on when you're on, like, you know, being recorded. It's really hard to stop doing those little innuendos that happen. Thanks, Cobra.
Yeah, it's Oh, well, that's an interesting concept, but you got to hope the show that you're doing lasts the entire season, and you got to really keep your fingers crossed that it doesn't, that it gets a second season. That's the trouble. A show like Last Ship, I would think, would be, you know, when you actually have an actual naval vessel and all that kind of stuff, because I assume that's probably an active duty naval vessel. Whenever they do outside shots, they've got to work around the crew and all that. Probably these days, the interiors are probably all done Hollywood. I don't. If you ever get the DVD of the Final Countdown, the current one that's out that has the extra stuff on it, talks. You know, it was really fascinating how they did it, but everything was what was about, you know, no, the Nimitz is not going to take time off active duty to work around you movie people. You know, we'll give you some time, but you're going to be here on the ship as it's carrying out its mission and work around our schedule. And all the stuff they had to do to make that happen, and lighting, you know, because it's not like they could take out a wall and put lights where they needed to. So they were doing all kinds of different little tricks to get that movie shot.
Yeah, it's been interesting, me too. All the behind the scenes stuff I've been really getting into this year, like the video editing, how they do it, how the camera angles, all that sort of stuff. If I watch a movie now, I'm watching how they're doing it. I'm not really watching the script or what's happening. Like I'm seeing where the scary bits are coming in, and if it's a horror movie, and you know, so what cameras they're using. I think I'm just learning a lot more about how to do that sort of stuff, and that's why I sort of notice a lot more things now. So I guess I'm just learning as I go along. But I do agree, I actually love that movie. I was about 16 or 17 when that movie came out. It's what, late 80s, wasn't it? Final Countdown, I can't remember.
Yeah, something like that. I was a little younger when I saw it. I saw it originally in the theater when it came out. That was one of my dad's favorite movies. He'd always ask me to put that one in.
Yeah, it's really good. If I've got the movie right, it's the one where the aircraft carrier goes back in time to World War II, isn't it? I think, is that the right one?
Yeah, that's the one, and they have to make a decision whether or not they're going to intercede in the attack on Pearl Harbor.
I thought it was really well done. They had a perfect script, that movie. And they did it really well as well. Especially with the planes being shot down, all that sort of stuff. I thought it was really quite a well done movie. And a little twist at the end.
Oh yeah, that makes the whole movie is what happens at the end.
Oh, speaking of time travel movies, there's a Leonardo DiCaprio's dumb one, which is really, really interesting. With lots of paradoxes in the whole thing, which I can't remember what it's called, though. But basically, he goes back in time. He's a time traveler. He tries to stop all these terrorist attacks happening. He goes back in time. He meets himself, who's actually a female, because he has a sex change operation or something in the 70s. And then he meets himself a bit older, and he goes back in time, goes forward in time again, and then he introduces himself to the to his own himself. It's really confusing. You just have to watch it. Lots of paradoxes, though.
I've never heard of that one. The other day I caught on cable Source Code, which I'd been wanting to watch, though I don't know what that movie has to do with writing code, but it's the one where you have a guy who'd been disabled in an attack, and basically his brain still functioned, which he finds out as he gets farther into it.
I think I've seen that. It's 2011, I believe. Source code is a couple of years old, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's a couple of years old. Like I said, it's up on free cable now. But sort of a Groundhog Day thing. And they want him just to tell him who the terrorist is. And they say, you know, you can't save these people. You can't affect anything. All we want to know is who the terrorist was. And it turns out to be just some crazy guy, not part of any anti-government group. But so he finds that out, and then he don't like to make spoiler for anyone, but it's a fairly old movie. I mean, at the end of the movie, they indicate, yes, there is one timeline, and he was able to, save the people and continue on in this body that he jumped into. Of course, they don't say what happened to the guy he jumped into. I guess he was dead anyway. But, that seems sort of like a more mainstream version of the movie you're talking about, Marcus. I think a lot of American audiences would have a problem with time traveling, sex change.
Yeah, actually, I must admit, you don't actually know what's actually going on in that movie that the Caprio one until the end. So you wouldn't actually know what was happening, because everyone thinks they're different people that he's actually meeting, not himself. What happens, there's a fire, and he has it's sometime in his lifetime when he's actually going back in time to try and stop this terrorist attack, and he gets burnt. So his face goes through a plastic surgery. So you never actually know what version of himself you're actually going through. It's quite interesting how they've actually done it. I actually thought it was a kind of well-done movie, because it's not like you actually know what's going on right to the end.
Of course, American audiences don't seem to have any trouble with people slipping into 11-foot-tall blue people.
Yeah, pretty much. I quite like David Tarr, actually. But yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Well, I did find out in my schedule I've got open, if I type something into a cell, if I don't hit enter, eventually it goes away on me. So, sorry, Ken, just a little bit of show notes. I'll see if I can't resurrect it here.
Am I allowed to post this up to Twitter, the live feed? I just thought, notice on your website you've got a live feed of it going. So, are you guys okay with me posting it up to Twitter?
I think you're a little late, buddy.
Was that from last year's one?
No, I already did it.
Okay.
But I'm sure you have more people following you than I do, so have at her.
Yeah, I've got about 2,400, I think. I've been actually hanging out on Twitter more than I have on YouTube and Google Plus lately.
I've been on Twitter more only because Klaatu has finally succumbed to the joys of social networking.
There's so many different social networks. I mean, I've actually been having trouble like trying to keep up. That's another reason I get frustrated. Like Facebook and Google Plus and Twitter. You've got to post your video 5 different places. It's like, it's frustrating. And Blogger. You get annoyed. I mean, I'm a blogger, but you get annoyed with all the different places you've got to post.
Yeah, I'm learning Reddit and Twitter and FaceShip.
I haven't heard of that last one.
Facebook.
Something else. But I stay away from Reddit because I just don't want to learn how to do it. LinkedIn, actually, I've got into this year. I've got quite a few followers on LinkedIn.
I think I have more followers on LinkedIn than I do on Twitter.
I've only just gone into LinkedIn. But I find all the social networks have a trick. You can't wait for people to arrive. You've got to really just figure out what the trick is. Once you figure out what the trick is, then you start getting a lot of followers. Twitter lets you to follow a lot of people at once, and then they follow you back, and you get a lot of followers. But Google Plus, you sort of have to add people in circles, and it's a bit confusing. Everyone's in the same circle, I don't know. But it does get quite... Facebook's different again, and LinkedIn's different again. It gets very hard sometimes.
Well, I've only used Facebook for the past years for the chat, and I pipe the chat in through Bitlby and access that through IRSSI. Same with Twitter.
I do like Twitter as a social network, though. It's just a lot easier to block people that are annoying you. I mean, especially the spam, all the people trying to sell their followers and stuff. I just block those people straight away. I do find if someone's annoying you, actually find the YouTube people that annoy you in comments don't tend to go after you on Twitter because they just don't know how to use it. Well, they can't be bothered posting it to Twitter. It's just it's just so different to them and alien. They get scared of how many people are following you, so they don't bother posting up. I think they realize that everyone can see your post, they post in you. I might just start to figure out the hashtags. I've been a bit slow on the hashtags. But it's quite interesting how the hashtags work on Twitter, and that's the key with Twitter. You can get everyone following a hashtag. That's how it works, and you can get, like Hacker Public Radio with a hashtag, and everyone starts following that hashtag, then you get a lot of people actually watching that feed.
Yeah, I just tagged it as hashtag HBR.
Oh, okay, well, I'll do that as well. So HBR?
Yeah, that's what I did, but I don't know if there's an official one or not.
It probably isn't. I don't know.
It's HBR, man. Nothing's official.
Yeah, I don't know why people get caught up in all the official stuff. I'm very on a whim sort of person. I do things on a whim. I don't like keeping to a schedule, and you know, you guys tend to be the same. I don't like keeping to a specific schedule when you do things. I don't like keeping to a specific topic. I just like to do things on a whim. I don't like having a script. I hate having a script. It's like boring.
I hate the news.
Yeah, I started to hate the news too, actually. Lately, it's been nothing but bad news on it.
No, I hate the news in general. I hear it from so many other outlets. I don't need to hear it on my techie podcast.
Yeah, I get like that too. It's just, you get, I mean, I find that the same websites have the same blogs on every website as well, which is annoying. Now, in the news, people are starting to follow the Twitter feeds now. They're too lazy to go and find their own news story, so they go to find a Twitter feed. Kim.com gets tweeted here all the freaking time. It's unbelievable. Kim.com did this on Twitter, and that's the breaking news story.
A lot happens in your neck of the woods.
Yeah. He was just on, he was on Breaking News the other day, not Breaking News, but the main news network with this PlayStation and Xbox thing.
Well, when I first moved up to Canada here, I was kind of ostracized for knowing so little about another country, while the Canadians around here knew tons about my country and knew a lot about where I was from, and I knew very little about them. Like, most of them could name all 50 states, and I couldn't name all, 14 provinces? I had no clue, and I've discovered the reason for that since I've been here. Nothing happens here.
It's the same here.
There's not, you know, four or five people getting shot, stabbed, or murdered every week. There's one every, you know, week or two. Really big news is a traffic accident in town.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is today. I think if I go and look at the main headlines, it's pretty much a traffic accident. Oh, there's a helicopter saving someone from the ocean. There you go. They're talking about the plane crash. There's a football game on, soccer team on, and that's about, and they're talking about the weather. It's the main, and a motorcycle crashes and kills two people, and that's the main stories at the moment. Well, not much happening.
I'm sorry. You know, I imagine part of it is, too, you turn on Canadian TV, and I imagine half of the shows on, you know, you're probably about as likely to turn on an American show as a Canadian show. We are starting to get to see a lot of Canadian dramas and stuff over here, but they're all syndicated.
Well, it's the same with all the American shows up here. They're all syndicated.
Okay, so you don't turn on your normal network and, you know, you're watching Law and Order or something.
Well, we don't have like ABC, CBS, NBC. We don't have those. We have CBC and Global, I think it is. Those are the two big networks around here.
Our TV's got really weird this year because with all the online demand content, they're moving into the online demand field. And there's a lot more stuff on demand legally that people can get to. Also, we've had a new service like Spark or something which the telecom company here has actually started, so like online, like Netflix type thing. But Netflix has actually just announced they're coming to New Zealand, so I don't know what's going to happen then, because that's where a lot of these people actually get their shows from. So I don't know.
Well, if Netflix is coming to your country, I highly advise purchasing a Roku 3 if you have the bandwidth.
Yeah, I've got unlimited here, so I'm pretty good. I just pay a $80 monthly fee. I'm quite happy. I use heaps of bandwidth. I use data, just uploading and stuff all the time, and then it's destroyed. So I go through probably 150 gigabytes a month, easy. Quite a lot. So I need an unlimited plan.
I'm on fiber, and I use loads of data.
All legal, of course. And most of the stuff is just Linux distros. And I don't think I download any medical anything anymore. see Spotify stream. Steam actually takes a lot of my data. I've got quite a few big games on Steam. Actually, I don't like reinstalling much just when you get operating systems now, because I find I prefer to keep one, because I've just got too many big games on Steam I like to play, and I don't like reinstalling them all the time. So I tend to stick with one operating system more and more.
Oh, Steam. Are you running that on Linux?
I have been. I'm actually on Windows. It's still Windows today, but I have been running it on Linux most of the week.
Is Path of Exiles on Steam, or is that only on Garnia?
What's it called? Let's have a look.
Path of Exiles.
Have a look for you. Path of Exile, free to play. There you go. It's on Steam.
Nice. That one's fun.
Don't know if that's on Linux, though, but it's definitely on Steam. It's free to play.
Yeah, I play that in Wine, and I thoroughly enjoy it. It's like a flashback to Diablo 2 on steroids.
Yeah, I quite like those sort of games. Chi Dean, who runs the Steam community on Google Plus, he gave me Borderlands 2 in a gift for Christmas, so that was quite nice of them. So I was quite happy with that, because that was one of the games I wanted for, because it's now on Linux, so it was one of the few games I could actually play my low-end system.
Oh, man, if they released a Linux client for that game, I'd give them $150.
It probably is on Linux. I could actually check.
Are you able to run Steam on any version of Linux, or do you have to use their special Ubuntu piece of crap version?
Majaro was having huge issues this year, but they've fixed it with their they've got a Steam runtime compatible, and I've just got a phone call. I'll be right back, but I'll get back to that in a minute.
Well, dang it. How long till New Year, 50?
Just about 10 minutes. You guys caught me in the other room recaffeinating.
Sorry, that was my wife. She's just coming home from work early, so it's annoying. She goes, I've got 10 minutes to get there before midnight. I don't think she's going to make it. It's like a 20-minute drive. She's annoyed.
She drives like my wife. She'll get there.
That's quite dark and stormy. I hope not. She'll crash.
Yeah, I want to take this time to say that Klaatu, wherever you are, you've got no excuse not to be on here, either now or when we roll back around sometime, during the day when it's more convenient, because that's why we haven't seen him. He's on the other side of the world, and he can't get to IRC from work, apparently. I take it it's some sort of high security, at least high corporate security type job, and their systems are way cranked down.
Many workplaces won't let you on IRC, I don't think, yeah.
Bump up your volume, 50. You're quiet again. Or move the mic closer to your mouth.
How's that?
Well, worse.
You guys might miss me if she does make it back in 10 minutes, 7 minutes, because I have to go for until she goes off to bed, that is.
You're speaking quickly again.
If my wife doesn't makes it back before midnight, which is 7 minutes, I might have to go.
Oh well, it happens.
Otherwise, I will pop back in anyway when she goes to sleep, probably about 1 o'clock in the morning, so another hour or so. But I should be on here for another 10 minutes or so anyway.
Well, maybe you can answer that question I had about the Steams.
Yeah, if you ask.
I was wondering if you could use the Steam client on any Linux distribution, or if you had to use it on the Ubuntu one that they rolled out.
No, it does work on most Linux systems. I tried it on Debian. Debian actually seems to work the best. You do Fedora, I've got it working on. Majaro, I've got it working on. Fedora and OpenSUSE and all those independent distros, you have to be careful that if you're on a 64-bit machine with the 32-bit libs, you have to install sometimes separately, which can be a real pain. I have had trouble with Football Manager 2014 on Fedora. And saying that, though, Majaro has fixed it. They've got a special Steam runtime program which will actually allow you to make it compatible, so you don't have that issue anymore. So that's one of the reasons I actually quite like Majaro now.
So is the Steam thing, is it... is it like a whole, like, all-in-one program that runs in the background and sets up all your games and stuff for you, or I have no clue whatsoever about it?
I actually buy a lot of stuff on the indie bundles, so most of my stuff I bought, though I'm not supposed to tell people this, but I just buy the cheap dollar thing and get four or five games for a buck whenever the indie bundle comes out. So I've actually got, over the last year, I've actually got up to about 75 games, and out of those 75 games, I've actually got about 32 of them are available on Linux. So it's just the same as how you'd use it on Windows. Just some of them available on Linux, some of them available on Windows. If you're going to install them on Linux, though, you need to install them on the Linux machine that you're on, because if you install the Linux game on Windows, it won't show up in the Linux version. That's pretty much the only thing you have to do. So just be careful what platform you're actually installing it on when you actually install it.
Well, I don't run Windows, I run Gentoo.
Well, you can still get Steam on Gentoo, I presume. There's no reason why you can't. I presume there's a Steam client for Gentoo, isn't there?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't really looked into it until you said that Path of Exile was up there.
Sebalon has got one, so I presume that Gentoo must have one. I did have trouble with... I tried Sebalon 15, I had trouble with Steam. But again, it's the 32-bit libs. You just have to find a way to get those installed. Unless you install the 32-bit version. So, I mean, that's probably the only problem you're going to have, is just getting those 32-bit libs installed on a 64-bit machine, which is annoying. It does it automatically. As I said, a lot of the other independent stuff doesn't. You have to sometimes set through stuff. My wife made it. I'm going to have to go.
Well, you have a good one, and a happy new year to you.
Yeah, I've got 3 minutes. I'll catch you guys later.
Well, I hoped at least Marcus would have stayed long enough to say happy birthday to his own area of the world, or not happy birthday.
She wants to do the countdown. I think she... How the hell did you get here in 10 minutes?
It was actually 8 minutes. But then I came around this corner and there was fucking police.
All right. Yeah, don't worry. We aren't flagging this one safe for work.
Sorry, I just told her that I was recording there. I'll stay in the room, guys, but I won't be able to speak for a while.
Well, have a good one, man. Do we actually have to wait for the New Year to announce the New Year show?
Oh, I think it would be best to get it somewhere close. You got to remember, when they're breaking the shows up, that's what they're going to use to guide off of. So you'd hate to have somebody come in and, let's say, if they're recording a whole big long thing, and then go to the hour point, and we're not there with the welcome greeting, which is where they're going to break it. Of course, we're not, you know, we're doing like 3 and 4 hours, so this one wouldn't particularly matter. But I would like getting the habit of doing it pretty much on the hour.
All right. Well, I'll just BS until the hour gets here, and then start talking again. Well, are we going to stop recording and start recording on the hour as well?
Actually, Kevin Wisher signed up to record this part, though. I don't see him recording. He may be recording someplace else. I'm recording, even though it doesn't show me recording, but I've got a recorder box open here, so... It'd probably be good if as many people record as possible as a backup. But as far as editing, I'm signed up for later tomorrow evening. It'd be most convenient for me. But you know, if somebody can try to get the whole thing in the background, and I'm certain Ken is probably recording from the stream on. Well, you can see that he is. He
Happy afraid. New Year.
Yes. Greetings to New Zealand, Auckland, Silva, Wellington, and Nukualofa.
Happy New Year, Klaatu.
Yeah, Klaatu, get off your tail and get on here. We haven't heard from you in so long.
All right, I'm going to stop my little recording and start it again.
Okay.
And I do have you as recording there, 50.
Okay, maybe it's because...
It's still 2014 with that.
Fucked up shit.
It's called time zones.
Weird.
No, it's called time zones. We beat everyone to the time zone.
But that's weird. So that's saying, like, we're ahead in the future.
Yeah, it's like about early morning there.
But that's weird.
That's how time zones work.
You know, that's if I was to die now, I'd still be alive where if I was living there?
Pretty much, I don't know, it's time to...
Somebody should give her a mic. She sounds like she'd be fun to talk to.
She's struggling with the concept of time zones.
That's alright. I'm still struggling with the concept of I'm on the show and I have no beer.
Yeah, I promised Ken I'd take it kind of easy. Oh, and Dude Man has joined us.
What's up, Dude Man? Maybe he's just listening for now.
Well, I did schedule a discussion, but if he wants to do it later in the day, that's good too.
Hey, can anyone hear me at all?
Nope, not a word.
How did you know what I said?
Your lips lit up.
How could you reply to me then?
Okay, I don't have a comeback for that one.
Ah, caught you. I almost started searching around trying to find if I'd messed something up.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Hey, how you all doing? Is the show started already?
Yeah, you're late, man.
I'm always late to the party, but last to leave.
Oh, you'll be up for a while then. I'm going to go head off to bed here, probably in about an hour, depending on how this coffee treats me.
Yeah, that's the trouble, getting up in the middle of the night and pounding coffee to stay awake, and then decide, oh, yeah, I'll do it for a couple hours, and then I'll go back to bed after all the coffee. It doesn't work too well.
Oh, no, it's better than that. I was up, I haven't gone to bed yet. I was up last night playing around with my HTPC, reorganizing my movies and TV
he's
shows
a song
and crap.
On Facebook. I don't know. There's a song for you guys on Facebook on your iPhone.
Hey, don't get us sued.
Is that Creative Commons?
About 30 seconds. Creative Commons anyway, other design. Must be.
Old Lang Syne is in public domain. I don't know if a particular recording by an artist necessarily would be, but that's a weird thing. That's in the public domain, and Happy Birthday isn't.
Still going. But that's what version? Who's singing that version?
Right.
Isn't Mariah Carey? That must be the Creative Commons. It's like, that would have been 20 years ago. Right.
Anyway.
Carol.
So, Dude Man, what's going on?
What's going on? I'm hoping that I got here in time to chat with 5150 about ARM Odroid devices. What time are we on right now?
About 5 minutes after I scheduled it, so yeah, you're just perfect. I hope it wasn't too early for you.
No. It was just I wasn't expecting New Year's Eve to be today for some reason, and I was planning it to be tomorrow.
You said something in IRC earlier. Let's start with that I was completely wrong about something on the Odroid. I've been talking about it on a couple podcasts recently, so fill me in. What did I get wrong?
Yeah, I only wanted to correct you. When you buy the, what's the extra memory card called? The EMCA or whatever, you actually get a little adapter with it, and it just allows you to plug it into a micro card reader. So it just adapts it so it's the same shape as an SSD card, or, you know, what do you call a micro SD card.
Well, see, I got one that I never got to use, and I didn't. It had an adapter to go on the to plug into the Odroid, but I don't think it. I don't think there was any way. At least I couldn't see any way I could use it to plug into anything.
And when you say an adapter, you have to push the little memory card onto the adapter, don't you? And then you can slot the adapter into an SD slot, can't you? A micro SD slot.
Well, I had some sort of thing that was off on the side, and then it had pins to go into the to slip onto the Odroid. It's not mine. Wasn't like the new Odroids where you've actually got a slot for both the SD and the EMMC. But it sure looked like there should have been a USB adapter in the kit, and there wasn't one.
Well, I've got an X2 and two U3s, and the X2 is quite a bit older. I don't know. What was the older model you had?
I had the original Droid X.
Well, I don't think that was too different from the X2, to be honest. And somewhere sort of in the middle of the memory of the actual board, there's a very, very minute kind of block that you push the memory card onto. So it's not a slot at all. It's kind of a little place on the card. If you don't look carefully, you can miss it easily.
Yeah, I saw that. Like I said, I just got busy and never got back to doing anything with it. But no, the new ones, like the C1, it's got a place for both of them just to slip in normally. So it's not hanging off sort of where you could knock it off easy.
Oh, I hadn't noticed that. And anyway, when you buy one of those cards, all the free I've bought, they come with a little adapter, and it just adapts it to an SD, to a SD memory card, a micro one. So if you've got any micro SD card reader in your computer, or you can put it into some other device, and then you can DD images to it, and you can basically, because I think you said that you can only use the image that comes burned on it, you know. But if you can connect it to your computer with this little adapter, then you can basically update anything. And for example, I use Arch on mine, and if you just do a search for Arch and those board names, there are really simple instructions how to install that for both an SD card and for this kind of external memory card.
Yeah, I remember at the time I used to go over to the forums, and there would be you would find your machine, and then the first thing on there would be a forum with links to the various images.
Yeah, that's right. So have you got a new one yet, 5150?
Not yet, but I sure do plan to, because, you know, I wish if I'd known the C1 was out there, I would have much rather spent $35 on it than on the Pi. And, you know, I mean, I'm glad I have the Pi, because that's what everybody has, and it's so well done. You know, again, a lot of it is that, you know, everybody's doing stuff on the Pi, so you can always, whatever you're trying to do, you can always find documentation on it. Whereas the other single board computers, like the Odroid, if it's not in that dev channel, it can be a little harder to find. Though, you know, with them coming out and competing on price with the Pi, I don't think it'll be very long before the Odroid has a pretty big following.
Yeah, I really hope so. I really like the Odroid so far. You know, I keep looking around, maybe like a lot of us, what little board can I get, you know, because maybe I have the feeling that it's cheaper, that I'm not buying a whole big computer, and it's easier to justify to my wife or to hide it, you know, that I buy something. But so I keep looking around, and I always just keep coming back to the Odroids. You know, I was tempted to get the X3, the XU3, but I just wish it had a little bit more memory, you know, just a bit more than 2 gigs.
Right, now that would be one big difference to see. Well, of course, they're doing that so they can sell the more expensive ones, because, you know, I would think that C1 would be perfect if it had the 2 gigs of RAM rather than, or 4 gigs of RAM or whatever, rather, you know, you have to go up to $65 on the U3 to get 2 gigs of RAM, even though the performance is about the same. Actually, the C1 has one more memory slot than the, USB connector than the U3 does. And for folks who want to follow along here, if you're not familiar with Odroid, go over to hardkernel.com. That's the vendor. Though I do think there's now a domestic vendor. Was it Ameridroid? Something like that. I'll see if I can't find it and slip it into the show notes. But I haven't checked their shipping prices, but the trouble with Odroid is when you get anything from Hardkernel, it's flat $25 shipping. So if you get the Odroid and you find out after a couple of weeks, oh darn, I should have got the EMMC card along with it. Well, that's another $25 for shipping on top of the price of the card. So you want to make sure you grab everything all in one chunk. The power adapter as well. I mean, the last one I did, I bought, because the power adapter was actually a little weak, I think, for most applications. It was only 2 amps, and everybody said, well, if you're going to fill all the USB slots and overclock it, you're going to need at least 2.5 amps. So I found, and I don't know if they're still that way. I haven't looked at the power adapters currently that they sell with them. Well, they don't sell one with them. You got to buy that separately. You buy the Odroid. But the ones there on the side, if I haven't checked to see what amperage they are. I just got a 2.5 amp adapter off eBay. And of course, nobody makes an adapter with that right plug. So I had to solder on an end from Radio Shack that fit that plug. See if I can't look that up too, because it's the same one I used on my I'm forgetting here, my Zip, was it the old Zip computer I had? Well, I'll think of that later. I know where to find the part number on the adapter on the power plug that fits it. It doesn't fit tight, but seems to work. And it's definitely the only one I found that was anywhere near the right size.
Yeah, I just noticed, 50, the memory card, you know, the extra fast one we were talking about, was it EMMC? It's not a slot on the C1. It's still a little decorative boxed area in the middle on the back of the card. So it's the same as all the other ones, I think.
Okay, I guess I was wrong. I thought I was seeing two slots now. I know the USB's mounted. Well, no, maybe that's my, B plus Raspberry Pi, where the slot's actually on the bottom now. I don't know.
The C1 does have a USB, a micro SD slot right next to the other card slot in the middle of the board on the back as well. So it's in a funny place.
Yeah, I was thinking it was the same. I said it's, you know, I think they're making it be 100% compatible with the B plus in cases. The Roy, I haven't seen hardly any case. Well, I don't see as many cases for the B plus yet. I was looking for one when I got it. I toyed with the idea of getting the forgetting everything this evening. I haven't even been drinking. The Asian site where you get all the parts for stuff like that, but they've got a little like 4-inch touchscreen LCD and so that you can so the LCD actually becomes the top of the case. But I didn't find any of those for the B plus, or I probably would have bought it at the same time.
Yeah, that sounds quite good. It's really nice. I just noticed they have an infrared receiver on the C1 as well as Gigabyte Ethernet.
Yeah, that's another plus on that. So you wouldn't have to use a mouse and keyboard to navigate if you wanted to turn it into a media box. I mean, that's, you know, I've heard all these things, people playing movies on their TV using the Raspberry Pi, and I guess they must be using that XBMC version of Debian. It's somehow a version of Raspbian, but I've got Raspbian on it, and just the stock one. I thought, well, I can install, you know, because I want something more like a desktop. And I thought, well, I can install XBMC, and if you look out installing XBMC on top of Raspbian, it's like 1,000 steps.
It looks like a pretty good upgrade from the Raspberry Pi, and I really hope it catches on, because I like the other boards and stuff they're doing. But I keep hearing talk or seeing mention that the 64-bit chips will be coming out, which will break the hopefully the memory restrictions. They can go over 4 gig of memory, hopefully, and a bit quicker. I'd be interested what happens with that.
Well, I just wish if they're going to have soldered memory that you can't upgrade, that they would go ahead and put some. I mean, I don't know if any of them have 4 gig. Does the XU3 have 4 gig, or is it just 2?
Nice. Yeah, it's limited to 2, which is a real shame. Although, I mean, the 2 U3s I'm using, I've never run out of memory. I'm not really using them as a desktop, although when I do, you know, unless I have hundreds of tabs open on Chromium, which I can do sometimes, then it goes fine. You know, it's really, really good machine.
Yeah, that seems why I always have to buy memory for my machines, because I have too many darn tabs open in the browser at one time. But if I close some tabs, I could get by cheaper. But, this little laptop I'm running now, when it was given to me, it only had 1, and that's not really enough. So if you're going to crack it open, you might as well do the max. Of course, it's 32. Well, I guess it probably uses all four. I think only 3.5 shows up. But yeah, that 64-bit restriction is not going to be a problem until they actually start putting that much memory in the system. Yeah, Marcus was just asking us in the chat if we can order pies online. And for a minute there, I thought he was hungry, but now I understand. Yeah, you can go to Newegg and get them now, but there's two original vendors, which I'm struggling to think of. I mean, where was it I got mine? A big electronics house. And I was impressed. I had the thing in my hand in a day. Oh, well, not in a day, but two or three. No. This last one I got on Amazon, it did take a while. The first one I got, the Model B that I got and never took out of the box except to look at it, I think I ordered it and had it 3 days later. That's why it was a Micro Center that I got it from, maybe. But the one I got off, this last one I got off Amazon, it took a little longer.
Hey, 50, did you get your farming machine fixed up so you could get back to your animals?
Yep, got it done just in time.
It's a real stress when they're hungry and stuff, and you know they're waiting, and you got to fix something, isn't it?
Well, especially when it's cold like this. It was 16 Fahrenheit here today, which is fairly cold. Now that's one thing that I'm glad about. This is cold as it's been this year, really. Well, you know, this winter. We had some weather in the 20s, you know, back at the end of October, and see the burn doctor. He told me, you know, you're going to be fine until you go it gets cold, and you're going to be miserable and in the need of serious pain medication to go out in the cold, at least, you know, this winter. So, you know, by a year from now, your skin will be thickened up and it'll be a problem. You know, I was out in the cold and snow today, and it didn't bother me any more than it, you know, didn't give me any pain in the arms or anything like that. Not that I particularly enjoy the cold, but I didn't have any unusual aches and pains. So either it stayed warm enough for me to develop a thick skin, or the doctor was mistaken.
Maybe the doctor's just not used to cold, and when it's cold, he suffers anyway, you know, and I don't know.
Oh, he seemed to know what he was talking about. They had me doing all kinds of stuff, you know, and I don't know if it's appropriate for the show. Not that I haven't talked about it before, but the guys at the burn clinic was, first of all, you got to keep this cream on your face or you'll be horribly scarred, and said make sure you really really scrub your arms and all that. And they didn't say, you know, try to peel the dead skin off, but I got that impression. And this burn doctor, I saw him 2 weeks later, he was like, no, quit torturing yourself like that. It's gonna fall off eventually anyway. You don't need to worry about it. Of course, I'd about gotten rid of all of it by that time anyway. But you know, really, I was, by that time, I was pretty well on the way to being mended. So, you know, I don't recommend anybody catch themselves on fire, but I think I'm probably the luckiest person who ever did.
Did the scars improve your looks at all? 5150. Have you got any scars which make you look more masculine?
Well, really, I didn't have anything on my face. You know, which that's the main thing I was afraid of. I had blotchy, blotchy different color skin for a while, but that all, you know, that all healed up. I don't get any different on my arms. Yeah, if somebody looked close enough, especially my left arm, you could tell I've got, you know, some weird pigmentation, you know, like it burned off all the pigmentation on my hand almost, you know. Well, it's like, you know, it's places that are sort of tanned, and the places where the fire was worse, there's, you know, it's not. So I don't know if that'll eventually change or anything come next summer, or if it's just going to be that way. You know, it's kind of a little more wrinkly, you know, in places. I mean, I can look at it and tell, you know, there's a difference. I don't know if anybody else would be able to.
It's things like that which really make it easy to be grateful for the little things, isn't it? last night I went out to feed the cows late, and you know how you get used to, they're just all in their places. And our youngest cow, who was born last year, her mother died this summer. She wasn't there, and I'm looking around thinking, oh, where is she, you know? So I have a look around outside, and she'd escaped, and she was wandering around outside having a look, searching for grass. But it's a really nice feeling when you can, when everyone's okay and you can get them all back, and when things go well.
Yeah, yours are probably, you know, and mine are fairly tame too, but yours are probably easier to get back in. Mine tend to be stubborn. You know, you try to put them back in. And it's awful hard one person trying, because you can't get around on more, you know, on two sides of them and force them in any case. You know, of course, Dad, it's been 5 years or so since he's been able to give me any kind of help on something like that. So if mine get out, I usually have to call neighbors if they haven't already seen it and showed up. But, you know, now that I'm moving and I'm going to be off the highway, I never could have a dog before because it was right there on the highway. It's bad enough for the cats. But, you know, I'm seriously considering getting myself a cattle dog because, you know, I'm getting too old to run them down or anything. So never had one before, but I'm thinking that may be a great help.
I got a suggestion for you, 50. Get a donkey, because if you can lead a donkey around, then you'll have really good strategy for leading cattle or anything. I got a really good strategy for leading the bulls or the cows around, and they just can't help but follow you then.
Yeah, that always works too. If you get a bucket full of grain or something like that, they'll tend to come to you. But when you got just one, it's awful hard. If you got a herd, you can lead them. But just one, it's awful hard. So the more you run back and forth, the more you know, stress they get. Of course, they tend to get tired too and say, oh, the heck with it. I'll go find the hole that I came out of and go back in it.
All I did, I just stumbled kind of nervously up to it so that it isn't scared of me, you know, not running up to it. Put a rope around his neck, and then just started walking home. And whenever he showed resistance, I would just kind of pull on the rope a certain amount, and then when he gives in, I let the rope go slack, and then I give it a 10 seconds or so, and then just carry on walking. And gradually, he realizes that it's just easier if he maintains slack in the rope, and then he just follows you.
Well, that can work if they're broke to lead, which mine aren't. If you can get close enough to throw a loop around them.
Well, I guess this one was tame, but I've never led her anywhere before, you know. But they know me, and they're you know, I'm around them every day, so she's tame and she was calm. But I'm guessing a lot of other people, they might have treated my one in a different way and would have scared her off, you know.
Well, see, that's a problem I have when people come help me herd cattle. They say mine are too tame. You know, it's hard to get them moving because they're not, you know, most people's herd naturally run away from human toward the hole, you know, and down the channel into the trailer. Mine just stand there and look at you.
Yeah, I was a bit like that. One day, a few years ago, our horses escaped, and they're in the middle of the village. And a few other villagers who don't have experience with bigger animals, they kindly came and helped, but they're only making the situation worse by kind of chasing after them like crazy dogs, you know?
Oh, yeah, I've had that experience too. You know, people don't know what they're doing. It's like, no, just let me do it, because you're just getting them all excited.
Exactly. Yes, I've been holding off buying any new arm boards because, basically I don't really need another one. And, you know, it's just toys. But I was hoping to get something a bit more powerful and with more memory.
Well, probably what I've got mine on, I've got the Plus on my TV. Like I started to talk about, you know, hear people play you know, streaming video and video files on it, and I just have had no success. So there is, was it OCP player? I talked about this. Probably the last Linux Lugcast, linuxlugcast.com, ka-ching. I can start VLC, but it just won't play anything. It just sits there. And I, you know, I can open up YouTube in a browser and the same thing. It tries to play it. It thinks it's going to play it. It doesn't ever play anything. And this, you know, this, there's this player that was written specifically for the Pi. So I don't think you, it, I'm surprised nobody's ported it to, you know, regular Linux for the PC, because it's like a great small footprint player, but, you just, go from the command line and give it the video file name, and it just starts playing. But it's not windowed, so you can't minimize it or anything like that. There are key commands to stop it or jump ahead or the next chapter or whatever you're going to do. But sometimes it takes a while for them for it to respond to it as well. I haven't watched a full movie with it. You know, I try to get it to quit. You hit Q. And I figured it just wasn't paying any attention. And finally, you know, one time after about 3 or 4 minutes, it quit. Finally, after the first time I hit Q, so I figured out, well, it probably is just, you know, buffering the key commands way in the future. It's probably not always looking, seeing what's been typed on the keyboard to maximize efficiency. But it does seem to play. I haven't done anything high res, but you know, normal YouTube video stuff like that I've saved with YouTube DL, it seems to play it just fine. But it seems to fill about a quarter of the three quarters of the screen, and doesn't obey any windowing or anything like that. But it's, is it OMX player? I think that's it. But it does work fairly well. Yes, I can play video, but it seems like the you know, the XBMC specific spin for the Pi must do way better on video. It must sacrifice everything else to make videos work. So if you're gonna get a Pi as a media player, then go ahead and grab that. You'll save yourself a lot of hassle. But Dude Man, you know, so that when I had my Odroid, they still hadn't gotten last time I had it running, they still hadn't sorted out the video drivers where you could really play anything like YouTube video. So can you do media on yours now?
Yeah, just as you were speaking, I SSH'd in and launched Chromium and had a look at YouTube, and it all worked fine. I mean, it was jittery because it was over SSH. I haven't got a screen connected to it, but it works fine, you know. But I'm running Arch, and I've forgotten what the packages were called, but somebody had ported some accelerated graphics through for the U3, and I tried that, and it was an improvement. But I think most people would be pretty happy. But I'm guessing it's down to the distro rather than what's actually available now.
Well, like I said, I'm going to get a couple of droids, probably a U3 for media, because it has the more memory, and a C1 just to replace the Pi. And probably what I'll do is take the Pi and I've got my two external drives for my server plugged into it now, and just use the Pi as a server. Though I don't know, I'm not sure I want to run it completely headless, because I've noticed do try to access those drives remotely through SSHFS, you know, sometimes I can't get into them unless I go into the Pi. You know, go through a file manager and click on that drive. Or probably I could SSH into the Pi and do the same thing by opening the directory where the external drives are mounted. But it's like my old server. I could always get into them. I didn't have to wake them up or anything. It seems like on the Pi you got to go in and wake them up.
Yeah, I'm running ZoneMind on one of my U3s, and I've got 4 cameras attached right now, kind of HD web cameras, infrared, and I'm really surprised that the small amount of load is creating on it. You know, I could probably get another 5 or 6 cameras on there.
Yeah, I tried that on my server, and I just had cheap USB. No, they were network. you know, they had an Ethernet port. They're IP cameras, but it's the same one about a year ago. And the one that didn't burn up, it's not working anymore. Doesn't appear to be. Lights don't come on under anything. But, I'm not sure I recommend the brand, but it's the ones that got, dinged about a year and a half ago because they were used as a baby monitor, and suddenly somebody external to the house was, you know, using the audio, because you do it does have a mic and a speaker, though it's, you know, it's awful, terribly slow. I mean, terrible lag if you enable that. But suddenly somebody was, they figured out somebody was watching their kid and talking at them or whatever. And they did have, you know, they had changed the default password. So it's not like somebody got in their network and found the password, or, you know, just read the manual and used the default password. So it was passworded. It just, there was a, apparently the firmware wasn't very good, though they did put a patch out there. Those were the ones that I cheap ones that I bought, but I never could get, what's the software you were talking about? I never could get them to recognize that they were on the network. So
the ZoneMinder, yeah.
I
had problems initially, partly trying to understand how to do it, but knowing what settings. But I don't know if it's improved or I've improved over the last year, but I'm really happy with it now. And I found some good cheapish cameras. I got them from Alabama. It's like a cheap Chinese website where you can get stuff, and I ordered four of them, and I think I'll probably get some more. And they're pretty fast, HD, infrared, no mic or anything like that. I went for the cheaper models, but I'm pretty happy with them, actually.
You mean Alibaba?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, see, I don't know if you've seen the pictures of the house that I'm building. You can see them on my Google Plus channel. But where it's going to be no windows on three sides, I'm definitely going to want some external cameras, and maybe one up on a pole at the top of the hill where I can look down and stuff and see who's coming in. Let hillbilly paranoia get away from me, I would probably set one up with a concentric rifle that I could, you know, use to shoot at people when they come on the property. But that would probably violate some U.S. law, so that's probably not the best idea.
Maybe you could conceal it so it's not visible, you know. They'll just hear it and feel it. I could definitely recommend the I can send you or give you for the show notes these cameras I have. They were pretty cheap and good quality, fast update, and they're working well with ZoneMinder.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that. I do think I'm not going to want to spend a lot of money, but I'm, you know, not an incredible amount. But yeah, when we're putting this house together, we haven't started doing the interior yet or whatever, but you know, you got to explain to the contractor, it's like, you know, I don't know, you know, I don't care what it costs, but I'm, you know, I don't want to be ever being more about 4 foot from a power plug and 2 feet when, you know, in the room I'm going to use for the office. And well, we'll see how that goes. About the same thing with Ethernet connections. They probably won't be all live at once, but I, you know, probably about every place I have a wall plug, I'm gonna want an Ethernet plug running back to, you know.
Well, these ones are dome cameras, and they have power over Ethernet, infrared, and I think they're about $100, something like that. And you get them cheaper if you get a few more. To take a few weeks for delivery, and they work pretty nicely.
Well, that sounds just like what I need.
I'll just try and find a website, and I'll post it in here for you. Carry on talking for a minute.
Okay, great. Yeah, I see activity on Oncast Planet. Why aren't you guys in here talking? Now, let's see. What else? We were talking. Of course, we got more options than ever before. I had to pull one earphone off. I don't know. Do you get that, dude, man? This is the first time I've ever had it from a headset, but, you know, these have got pretty tight-fitting hands. But, you know, it happens to me all the time when I'm wearing down in the earplugs on my media player, because I guess I'm plugging off the station tubes. And, you know, and I've got some acid reflux, but do you ever get hit with like a fit of nausea or anything like that? I do. It just comes all of a sudden. I got to just yank the earplugs out, you know, just immediately.
And that's connected with the earphones. That creates that in you, does it?
Yeah, well, this is the first time I've had a headset with, you know, this one's got cans rather than just, you know, the fuzzy earmuff sort of things like I have on my analog. But yeah, I'd pull one off. That's the first time on one of these. But you know, on my media player, it happens to me all the time. What will happen is I start doing anything, you know, halfway strenuous, and I forget, you know, and I'm listening to a podcast, and then and of course it's worse when it's cold. That also seems to, when it's cold and damp, like it's been. That really seems to exaggerate my acid reflux too. So, and I'm sure this is great fodder for podcasting that you folks listening at home. When it gets up on the site, yeah, we've been talking about being on fire and nausea. I'm sure it's been a great hour podcasting. But you know, is that, any folks listening, if you want to come on or whatever, you know, has that ever happened to you? And I'm talking not to just dude man, but everybody in the sound of my voice, or am I only the weird person here?
So if it's connected with the pressure of those plugs that you put in your ears, I mean, I never use those. I like the headphones that go over your head, even if I look a bit more stupid out and about with big headphones on. But the acid reflux, you want to have a look at your diet and the condition of your gut, because that can really get quite bad.
Well, you know, I said what I need to do is, there's stuff I can use to control. I mean, Prozac or whatever, over the counter. Not what I need to do is I'm always treating it after I get it. And that stuff, really, I think you need to take it every day for it to do you any good. I need to set myself up with a pill binder like I was an old person, and, you know, every day take antihistamines and acid reflux and aspirin or something, you know. But I'm always chasing it after the fact.
I just put a link in about an article from the Weston A. Price Foundation. It's something I talked about maybe the year before last at the end of a podcast about diet and what have you. I didn't intend to mention anything about it this show because maybe some people didn't appreciate it last time, but it's there for you to read, 5150, and it really is connected a lot with the type of food you eat and the health of your gut, you know. And maybe a lot of those medications, they might help on the short term by suppressing it, but it's only going to make it worse, you know. Oh, and just before that very long link above in the chat is the link to the webcams I have.
Okay, yeah, I see it. Well, it's a Google link, which is probably why it's so long. Let me bring that up in the browser and see if I can shorten it for the show notes.
And next time I'll see if I can find an even longer link.
Good morning, everybody. Greetings from Belgium.
Hey, Nightwise.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Pretty well, pretty well. Hey.
That's the last day of the year, so it's mandatory that I jump in here and say my hellos. I hope everybody's doing great, except for acid reflux. I'll join in with my ailments of the season, where damp weather gives me lower back pains.
With lack of... Go on, 50.
I'm sorry. I'm real glad I don't have that. Wow.
We've had a pretty warm year here, and we've had a little bit of snow a couple of days ago. But before we got there, the temperature, the weather started really, you know, turning around. It was moist and damp and cold, and that's lethal for me. So I just walked around like an old guy for a couple of days.
Do you do any kind of exercise to help it out, to strengthen your back?
We have a Stairmaster upstairs that I use, and my chiropractor once said that my pelvis going up and down when I'm on the Stairmaster is actually good for my lower back, and that strengthens the muscles.
You might want to have a look at plank exercises. Really great for your core.
Oh, that's interesting. Because googling that.
It's really easy to do. Just you prolong the time that you can kind of support yourself in different positions.
Oh, yeah. There you really have to make sure that your back muscles really hold your spine straight and stuff. So, yeah, cool.
I had a stove maker here, and he was... Are you on automatic talking, or...?
I'm afraid I am, so I'll go to push
it's
the top.
Echoing quite a bit.
Oh, sorry about that. Hello, Poppy.
Hello.
Let's try now. Yeah, I had a stove maker who was complaining about a bad back because he was lifting stones up, and he went and got one of these girdles. So it's like a big girl's blouse, whirls in a girdle, and I tried to persuade him that he should try and develop some muscles to hold it up naturally instead of this big tight girdle.
Yeah, once you get in those back braces and stuff, I've got a friend like that, can't hardly move. You know, resort to stuff like that, you're about done, you know, is my thinking. But of course, that can save your back. I did try, you know, like a weightlifting girdle for a while because, you know, I'd lift my dad up and stuff. And sometimes that would get to be on my back. And like I said, I'm always chasing the problem afterwards. It was always a hassle to put this thing on. You don't want to walk around all day wearing it. But there were times that did give me some relief when I started to get down that way. Usually my knees would give me problems. You guys know I got the bad knees. I wear braces all the time. Well, my dad, the reason he couldn't get up is because he had a bad back. And once you start, I can tell you from experience, once you start going that way, it's awful hard to get back from. Though, you know, I'm in a position where, I do have a full basement in this place that I'm renting. I don't really have anything down there, the washer and dryer. And, you know, I'm glad I'm not going down there 12 times a day. Cause that would get to my knees a bit, but probably if it's going to be here longer, I would have that all filled with antique computers again or something like that. I would find a use for the space. Right now, I don't have use for the space that I have. I think it's a new place, you know, now that they've poured the floor and all that, it doesn't look as big as it sounded like on the, when we're doing the plans, but I'm sure it'll be plenty for one person.
So you're going to get a gym in there, 5150? I bought a gym machine this year because I wanted to get into some strength training, partly because of back pain I was having a few years ago, and I'd have the back pain unless I did some kind of yoga on a regular basis. And basically, I've started to do some of those plank exercises and general strength training and feel a lot better, you know.
I don't know. I know who has ever bought a machine. Most of the times, they just use it to hang their laundry on. So
you need to get one with big, big kind of sticky out things, so you've got the biggest chance for hanging stuff.
Yep, confirmed. I always have to make sure that I got the laundry off of the cross trainer. What did help for me, however, is I stuck a tablet to the display. So in the morning when I get up, I go upstairs and I put on an episode of some video podcast, or another thing which is ideal, and a TED Talk or an episode of The Big Bang Theory, and that's about 20 minutes. So while I'm watching that, I'm on the cross trainer, and that gives me my 20-minute exercise, and I am entertained, and then I'm done. So that helps, making it, tying some podcast or geeky entertainment to it. That helps.
There is a bit of a difference. Maybe it's controversial, but I was interested when I started to study this last year because I started to get into it. I thought I was really fit because I have quite an active life, but I was having lower back pain and feeling tired sometimes. So I thought I had to do something about it. You know, I'm 40 already. maybe that's young. But anyway, there's quite a big difference between the just cardiovascular exercise and actual strength training exercise. And I reckon what I studied, a lot of people would benefit a lot more from doing not extreme strength training to be really strong, but focusing rather on strength than too much cardiovascular just to burn fat. You can actually burn a lot of fat from just doing strength training as well, and those muscles that you develop, especially around your core, can prevent the back pains and make you feel and walk a lot better.
I think that that is something that I should look into, because I think that compared to a lot of mostly American podcasters of my age, I'm a little bit in a different class when it comes to weight. I weigh in at 128 pounds, so I don't have a lot of extra fat to burn. I think I need to work on my muscles.
Sure. But you're not American, are you? So you have different genes.
I guess I do, but I'm scrawny for even Belgian standards, I guess. 128 pounds, I'm 40. 40.
Yeah, that's pretty light. But definitely, I appreciate more trying to develop muscles that just support my activities, you know. And I have an active life. I sit at a computer as well, but the activity wasn't enough to maintain and develop the strength that you need just to get out of a chair, you know, and stuff like that without hurting yourself sometimes.
Yeah, and that's true. The only thing is, how do you watch a video podcast while planking? You'll just have to shove the tablet right under your nose. That helps.
Well, I've got a clip zip, a sensor clip zip, and I have it attached to the top of these kind of big headphones. And basically, I just go around listening to podcasts all the time or audiobooks and stuff.
I've noticed that does really help, because the Roman or the Greek thing, the healthy mind and the healthy body, is something I try to keep track of when I'm doing any exercises. Either I go walking or cycling, or I'm on the cross trainer. I really found that they are ideal moments to kind of, you know, listen to a TED talk or listen to an HPR episode and stuff like that. That's something that's making it bearable. And if there are any geeks out there who have New Year's resolutions that say, I should you know, start exercising that next year, it's a great time to you know, give yourself an excuse to listen to some interesting content, distraction free.
Yeah, sure. Just to go back on the thing about the cardiovascular, what I was studying was that people can get too obsessed with doing just too much cardiovascular, and it can actually create kind of, you know, like the running syndrome, that if you run too much, you really mess up your knees and your feet, and it's not necessarily healthy. And that's one disadvantage with just doing too much cardiovascular. And you can actually atrophy your muscles by doing too much, because, you know, if you don't eat enough or have enough, you know, food, then you start just to waste away and lose your muscles from doing too much cardiovascular, if I've not messed that up too much in my interpretation for everyone.
It's true. The one thing is, when you do cardiovascular exercises, and you get that, you know, what runners have, that they want to need to have to run. But if you don't do any other exercises and you just go running, for example, I went running last year. I tried one of those start to run courses. It's brutal. It really is brutal on your knees and on your back if you haven't strengthened those muscles first. That's true.
Well, school I worked for, one of the coaches, way better shape than, a little older and way better shape than I am. And I remember him having a heart attack. I haven't had one, which is amazing. So, you know, I do think it's, you know, do a lot of running and all that stuff. You can, even if you're physically fit, you can, unknowingly put a big strain on your body and run into a problem.
Go on.
One of the trends that we have over here, I think they're a little bit everywhere, is that especially in IT or other knowledge related branches, people are obsessed with running and, you know, logging their runs and posting their runs. And you know, some of them go as far as, you know, I did a half a marathon and I did this and then I did that. And these are people that are, you know, sitting at, behind the desk all day. And then in their free time, they have this sudden urge to compete and run half marathons. And I think that this year in Belgium alone, we've had 3 deaths in one of these events where people just keeled over and died because they want to not only exercise, but also feel the need to compete. And you know, these are regular office jockeys, desk jockeys that run a triathlon, which is, you know, something normally only sport jocks do.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at that. I wanted to ask them because I was concerned at my age, condition of my heart and what have you, and connected with the food I eat, thinking, you know, is it healthy? And I got one of those pulse rate monitor watches, a Polar one, just so that I could measure my heart rate variability. I don't know if you guys have heard about that. But anyway, I was really satisfied with the results because it graded my heart at elite athlete of a 26-year-old. And I'm sure that must have improved over the last 10 years. But it made me feel much more satisfied in doing exercises and stuff like that. But that was before I started to do much exercise.
Yeah, I'm sure if I got one of those, it would say, you know, are you there? Are you dead?
Well, have you? Do you understand how the heart rate variability works? Because it's really fascinating. Probably more geeks would appreciate that.
Well, I would expect that people who are not very fit, like I am, that you start doing anything at all, your heart rate goes from the base level to being, you know, running really, really fast, which is where you get into trouble.
Ah, that's not actually it, because what it measures is the speed and the sensitivity at which the heart can react, even to your breathing at rest. That as you breathe in and out, your heart, there should be micro responses, and the kind of flexibility of that indicates the health of the heart.
Okay, let me hear. It's a new year.
Yeah, I was going to say, let me jump in and welcome into the new year, Eastern Russia, the Marshall Islands. It says 5 more. We need to fix that because it says 5 more, and we don't know what more is. Andyar, Funafuti, Yaren, and Tararua.
Happy New Year!
Yay! Going to stop my recording, then start it again, and then I'm going to take a nap.
Say, no, I pronounce Tararua because you always hear about it in World War II. But one of these days, I need to sit down and figure out how to actually pronounce all these and then fill in all the ones that say 5 more. Because, you know, they're all those places are probably like, hey, you know, there's only 5 places out there. You could actually mention us.
Yeah, where were we at? I think that we're the planets racing through the part of the Pacific that's going through through the new year, right? Or are we on the Russian mainland?
No, Australia would be coming up in about an hour. You got Australia about an hour away.
Well, I it says parts of Russia, so I would assume that we're to the eastern part of the Russian mainland. Maybe some of those islands that they're always contentious with Japan over out there.
Yeah, that could be correct. It's Australia's first. That's one I always forget. I always thought that they were the last, but they're actually the first, right?
No, we hit New Zealand first, and actually we hadn't hit New Zealand when we started. So there's a few islands out there close to the international date line. And if you look at a map, that's why it's 26 hours. There's a few of the places in that same area, that, or at least in that same latitude. Or no, I guess it's longitude. It's the same longitude where it won't be New Year's till 24 hours from now.
I think Samoa was on our side of the international dateline until a couple of years ago, and then I'm one of the Samoas, and then they changed it, and there was a big, huge uproar in Samoa because they went from being the first ones to get stuff to the last, something like that.
Yeah, I was about to say that. I read that one of the islands actually hopped back because it was horrible for business to be a day behind or ahead of the rest.
Oh, did you say that's Tararua that I mentioned? That we need to fix that before next year? Or is that another island?
I remember the story. I forgot the name of the island.
I have two. I think it was both Samoans. I'm sure Samoas. It's like Western Samoa, and which is American controlled or something. And then there's Normal Samoa. I think it was the Western Samoa one that ended up being on the other side of the international date line. They're pretty much right next to each other. Stupid.
I think that that is one of the things that, as a geek, frustrates me the most, datelines and time zones, especially doing an English-speaking podcast with a lot of the community in the U.S. I really feel like I live in this part where you are here and all the fun stuff is over there. You know, that chart, that Star Wars poster that was so popular a couple of years ago. I feel like that, especially with time zones, having constantly to deal with the fact that people sleep when I'm awake and vice versa.
I have the same. Poppy's normally asleep when I'm awake.
I used to do a podcast with Dave Gray, Australian podcaster, and Katie Murray, a Canadian podcaster, and we did live shows. So when we recorded, it would be Sunday morning, 6 a.m. here, 4 o'clock in the afternoon with Dave, and 10 o'clock Saturday evening with Keith. So both gentlemen were on either their first beer of the day or the last beer of the day. And I had just, gotten out of bed for 15 minutes and needed to be sharp as a whip so I wouldn't get my behind served to me during the recording.
I find there's one time about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, actually it must be later than that, about just when the English are waking up, the Americans are still, it's late evening in America and it's about, it's just getting into the evening our time that everyone's in the same time zone. You can actually get everyone on at the same time. Actually, I think it might be early morning too, about 7 or 8 o'clock, which our time when you can get everyone. Otherwise, jumping in and out.
It's one of those sweet spots. I know that if I do recordings with people from the other end of the pond, either you do them extremely late in the evening for me, or the wee hours in the morning are also good, especially for New York, the West Coast. That's a tough one for me.
Yeah, that's kind of a stretch. And well, in fact, a few years ago I did the Pod Brewers. Forgetting again, and I haven't had any beers at all. One of the participants was in California, and everybody, I was in the Midwest, a couple was from the Midwest, and then everybody else was in Eastern time zone, and even the 4 hour difference was a little hard to span.
I find a lot of this in America happens right about 3 o'clock in the morning for me. Like, I know some plugged Jupiter Broadcasting Unplugged and all their stuff's on about 3 o'clock in the morning. And I think Chris Fisher does that just so I don't show up to the room. I've never actually made a show because I've always at the exact wrong time for when it's actually on. It's just a weird time. It must be like 4 o'clock in the afternoon over there or something. But it's 10 o'clock in the morning, I think it is. I'm in the US, and I can never ever make that time zone. Really good, dumb time for me.
Well, I did want to mention, dude, man, how we used to get on, or used to join us about the time, in the old days on Friday nights, we would do the Podnuts Lug, and then Linux Basic would be on. And then do Pod Brewers, and about the time we finished that, you would usually come join us. Now,
there was a British podcast. I can't remember what it was. What's the British one or the Scottish guys? There was a Scottish guys that used to do a podcast I used to make because the 12-hour difference is actually quite good because normally I can work out what the time zones are. Like 8 o'clock in the morning for me is 8 o'clock in the evening for them, so I'd normally hit the time zones that they were on, but I can't remember what the podcast was though.
So there was one that was a spin-off of Lug Radio. I think it was called Hash Lug Radio. And then there was another one which was a Freenode podcast, which was called Free As In Freenode, I think.
Calvin, was Calvin something? Is there a Calvin podcast?
You're not thinking of Crivens, are you?
Crivens, Irish or something. Irish or Scottish or something.
Well, they're both Scottish on Crivens.
I can't understand what they said, so that makes sense.
You know, that's a little
the feeling's mutual.
Yeah, it's a little funny coming from you, Marcus.
I've got used to it. Actually, I've been talking to Velcro most of the year, but yeah, it's a really hard one to pick up. I find the Welsh one quite hard too. The Welsh and the Irish can be quite hard to pick up sometimes.
Yeah, a lot of it depends on sound quality and all that. Some of the old stuff it was on HPR that was recorded from OnCamp. You know, unless the room was really quiet, and it never was because people were always scooting their chairs or whatever, you know, it was very hard for me to pick up.
I actually thought this had been shut down. I didn't think OpenSpeak was still up. I just lost the port or something, and I haven't come back in OpenSpeak for about 12 months, I think. I actually thought it had been actually shut down for some reason. I don't know why. It wasn't until I looked on Hacker Public Radio about a month ago that I saw that you guys still had a mumble room. So Oddcast Planet is Hacker Public Radio, is that correct?
No, not specifically. In fact, it's actually, there's an Oddcast Planet website, I think it's oddcastplanet.org, that has a list of all the Oddcasts, but generally it's become just a general meeting place for a lot of the podcasts. Now, Podnuts has their own channel, but a lot of those guys are over there at Oddcast Planet. You know, we use it for Colonel Panic Oddcast as our default channel. Now, Linux Lugcast, we've got Hash and Linux Lugcast for it, but usually people from a lot of the various podcasts hang out in there. So, no, it's definitely not just an HPR thing, or, well, it never has been, you know, HPR specific.
Well, it's kind of my home away from home. I just go there for not only the podcast talk, but also the general open source FOSS related knowledge that hovers around there.
I tend to just lurk there, and then people highlight me now and then when they're ranting about Ubuntu.
One of the many channels that Popey keeps in touch with to track his stalkers and nemesis enemies.
I am not a stalker of Alan Pope, and I'm not one of the enemies. Only on 7 days of the week. I just annoy him. I think I frustrate him as well.
Yeah, Popey may have directed that towards me, because always seems like when we talk about Oddcast Planets, because I'm giving Ubuntu a thrashing for something.
It happens.
When it comes down to IRC, Alan Pope is Ubuntu. Simple as that.
Oh, thanks. Actually, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know.
That's a coin with two sides.
I tried the former PROS this week. It's called, what's it called? I can't remember what it's changed into. But not too bad. Guys restarted it again. They restarted.
Is it the same guy? I thought it was.
I don't know if it is or not. I could never get the information, but everyone's saying it's the same person.
David Tavares, I think his name was.
Yeah, I've never got his name. His name's not written down anywhere on it. It's, I can't remember the name now. I've had it installed all week too. I just changed it today. I just can't remember what the hell it was. Some fruit name. I can't remember. But it was actually not too bad. It had it's got a new Mate version, which has got Compass installed and everything. And it actually was working all right, because I have huge issues with Mate on my computer. And it had a XFCE 32-bit version, but the 64-bit version just came out, and it was for a first effort, it wasn't too bad. Obviously, whoever it has, it put a lot of PROS into it, which was actually pretty crappy, but they fixed a lot of the bugs, so I was quite impressed with it, because normally I was expecting to find a lot of issues with it, and I didn't find many.
I think that the Mate interface for me was the FOSS version of the Walking Dead in real life. I had never expected that OS to come, that graphical user interface to come back and be so popular as it was today. I didn't see that one coming.
I remember talking to Poppy doesn't remember this, but I remember talking to him a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and him saying you'd never be a Mate version of Ubuntu.
I never said that.
I'm sure it was you that said that.
No,
I could be wrong.
Don't put words in my mouth, dude. I didn't say that.
would have been 2 years ago. It would have been a long time, just when Mate came out or something. I can't remember, but it would have been a long time ago. It was either you or someone else, but someone said...
It was someone else.
Okay, it must have been someone else.
Well, it does seem like every desktop known to man, somebody does a spin of it for Ubuntu. And if that's all it does, I always wonder, you know, why? Because most of them, you can install whatever desktop you want from the repos. If you can't find that, you can probably find a PA that has it. So why build a whole spin just for one desktop?
Because partly, you know, you don't want to download an ISO image, install a desktop, and find that it's KDE, and then have to rip that all out and go through all the faff of ripping out all the individual little components in order to put back other components to replace them. It makes way more sense to have an ISO image that has exactly what you want on it for you to install.
I would actually agree. Thank you.
Yeah.
Also, it's difficult because sometimes, you know, the desktop is tailored for that particular graphical environment. So there'll be lots of little bits that are in a KDE desktop, for example, that don't exist in a GNOME desktop, like Phonon or whatever, Akinardi, and all these other components that aren't on GNOME. And if you start off with a KDE desktop, just as an example, and then rip it all out and put GNOME on, then there's quite a bit you've got to rip out, and you go through a transitional and for an expert, like, you know, you or me, that's possible, but for an average user who just wants to put a CD in and it work, then it's not a reasonable expectation, I don't think.
Well, I can certainly see on that point. I've never been one of those people that have gone along and said, well, I'm not going to install any Qt applications because it's going to burn all that extra weight, or I'm not going to install any GTK applications because I don't want that on my computer. So I can see if you want to run a thin system, perhaps without either of those on there, then. But I would think probably you could find an open box spin or something like that, and start with that.
Right, but then you still have to rip stuff out and put stuff in. If an end user who doesn't have the skills to rip out all the bits and pull all the right bits back, that's just not a tenable option. It's not that they don't want Qt and GTK libraries side by side. They may be perfectly happy with those libraries side by side, but they just don't want that desktop, and to rip something out and put something else in just makes no sense.
It's true. You don't have to rip out a desktop. You can just leave it there and boot into another desktop, but you're still left with the crud of the desktop spin that you didn't want. So let's, for example, say you have both the KDE terminal app and you have the GNOME terminal app, or just an example. What I found out to be true is I'm installing Kruton on my Chromebook these days, and it gives you a very light version, an absolute minimum version of, for example, XFCE or LXDE, and you have to pick and choose which applications that you want on there. And I found that to be very refreshing, because I started to see that a lot of clutter that was on my machine was because of the default desktop installs, leave alone what would happen if I would install two graphical user interfaces. Now I just start out with one very minimal one and install the applications, only the applications that I need. And that is something that really, you know, makes it all a little bit easier to manage. So for my personal preference, I like it that way.
And it also gives people the opportunity to tailor their distro. So, for example, the Ubuntu Mate remix doesn't ship with the same default applications that Ubuntu does, and doesn't ship with the same default applications that Kubuntu does or Zubuntu does. It allows them to make those opinionated choices to say, well, you know, maybe we don't want Rhythmbox as our default music player. Maybe we want to have Clementine or some other music app. And so they can put together a set of applications that best represents what they think the desktop should be. And obviously afterwards, yeah, anyone's happily can rip out individual applications and put something else in. But I think the tricky part is ripping out the desktop.
I agree, though. I like staying with something small and just adding stuff. I don't like distros that are bloated. like have three of everything. Actually, just one thing I would say that was I didn't like about this POS version, which I can't remember the name of, is the fact they put three of everything in it, like three music players, three browsers, three. I just can't see the point in that in a distro.
Well, you know, everyone has their own use case, and, you know, some people like choice. Some people like having lots of options. Some people like the fact that, you know, there's something called Ultimate Edition, which is basically, you know, a DVD with everything on it. You know, it's got every browser, every, you know, email client, everything. And some people like that. Some people like the feeling of installing a distro and they're just being this mountain of stuff that they can play with and they don't have to go off and find it. It's just there in the menu. Some people like that.
Yeah, I know. Some people are like that. I don't know, though. I mean, I do like operating systems that come with what I want, that I don't have to reinstall stuff. I like certain things. Like in the video drivers, I like to be able to have easy access to or be able to install pretty easily. I like to get simple screen recorder, even if I can install it in the terminal. I like to get... I like to have VLC player. I don't like lots of stuff, and I like Steam, but that's about it. As long as I can get three or four items, I'm normally pretty happy. And I can't get one of them, I get annoyed. Normally on Debian. But that's just me.
Well, I mean, that's a problem I always run into with the GTK versus Qt libraries, having one or none or both, there always seems to be something that is the only good application, the best application for what you want to do is in one of those libraries, and as soon as you install it, you get all that extra weight anyway.
What's the problem with that? If, like, you know, if you ran a GNOME desktop and the best music player out there was Clementine, for example, and that's a Qt app, what disadvantage is there in having those Qt libraries?
I don't think there. Like I said, I'm worried about it because that's always the situation that I've run into. I guess if you were on a very low power system, I don't know. If that actually saves any CPU time or memory space by eliminating one or the other or both of those libraries or not.
I guess it does depend on your system, though. I mean, I have issues because I've got a low-end the video card, I've got low-end CPU, so that's why I have issues. But if you're on an i7 and an 8GB RAM, you'd probably be running perfect. Some people do have low-end systems.
And I guess some people don't like, you know, if you're on a limited internet connection, you know, if there are updates for Qt and GNOME, then you're going to get more updates because you've got more stuff installed. The more stuff you have installed, the more updates you're likely to get over the life cycle of your system.
Are you guys all on low? I'm not sure what Alan Pope's on, but are you guys on low-end systems or high-end systems? Like, I'd be interested to know, because you guys are mainly people that like to muck around with your computers, so I'd just be interested to know.
Well, actually, right now, I'm on a donated laptop for my cousin. It's it's a low-end dual-core Centrino, but it's been doing everything. The only thing I really had to do to it is swap out the memory. It came with 1 gig, and that's why I'm running Crunchbang, because I thought it would be fairly low system requirements, but then I couldn't. Learning curve on OpenBox was a little high for me, so I decided to go the easy route and install LXDE.
There's not a lot of difference between the RAM with XFCE, LXDE, and OpenBox. I actually find you can get some OpenBox operating systems, which are actually quite high end on the RAM usage. I've noticed that with some of them.
Well, LXDE is just more stuff on top of OpenBox anyway, isn't it?
I think so. I quite like LXDE, personally.
Well, that's usually my default system. Over on the Pi, I am, I'm messing with learning a call was, it's i3, and
yeah, I've got the processor below the i3, which would mean I've got enough RAM, I've got 8GB RAM, but I have real issues with that processor. It's annoying. Why I'm going to buy a new laptop very shortly with an i7 in it.
And it's, but really, I find most of the time I'm using the mouse, which I shouldn't be doing on it, but I've got, why do I always forget what I'm talking about in the middle of a podcast when I haven't actually been drinking?
I forget things all the time and change the topic completely. People don't understand it at all. It's okay. It's random.
Synergy, that's what I'm thinking of. Really, I've got the Pi hooked up to a big 50-inch TV, and all I'm using really is an extension of my screen so I can run stuff. I'm using Synergy to control it, so even with i3 on there, I'm using a mouse to do everything, so I'm not learning my lessons very well.
I'm still learning. I quite like learning. I love learning about new stuff. I find if I tinker around with something I can't get working, even if it's really frustrating me, if eventually I get it and eventually I'll work it out and eventually I feel good about the fact I've actually learned something. I mean, Fedora, I mucked around with Fedora 20 for ages this year. Couldn't get stuff to work. Really struggled. And the trouble with Fedora, I find, is that some of the information is quite old, and I get information from an old source, and it stuffs it up even more. But eventually you find the right thing, and once you find out how to do something, and you don't tend to forget it, and you tend to be able to know how to do it next time. So I mean, in some ways, getting frustrated in Linux is not a bad thing. But I don't know. I forget things a lot of the time, too. Just quietly.
Okay, at the 30-minute mark, we're coming up on another New Year's greeting, so keep that in mind.
Isn't Australia aligned with Japan? So is it Australia and Japan, or is it sort of Singapore and Australia? They're a bit more. Yeah, I get lost with the upper time zones in Asia and Australia.
Well, I'll look that up in a minute. I've got a time zone map open, but I don't want to lose focus on the schedule right now.
I can go website timezonetimeanddate.com. Okay.
Yep, that's what I have open. If anybody wondered why I'm in the room twice with my Pi recording, I forgot I introduced a problem in my system the other day, and I was planning to, now I've got the memory sometime after the first year to start over again with Ubuntu, because there's a few peripherals that just aren't supported with Debian, unfortunately. And, I decided that pages weren't loading fast enough, and it must have been, even though I have the bandwidth that Cox Cable servers, the DNS server might be a little slow, so I went in and tried to switch it over to Google, and it worked great, and then I wasn't getting pages at all, and I switched back to taking the automatic settings, and every once in a while, I just seem to lose the DNS server entirely, and then I can't pull up any web pages, anything I already have open, like I've been talking to you guys this whole time. And if I do a ping from command line, sometimes that brings it back. But always, if I do set the Ethernet card down, bring it back up, that always fixes it. But I forgot when I started this evening, I was working with a faulty system. So that's why I'm recording. I'm in the channel with the Pi and recording with it as well. So we'll see how that goes. I don't want to fill up the channel with too many extra bots to not have enough room for people.
This is a big server anyway. Doesn't it fit up to 100? There shouldn't be too much issues with that.
Well, I don't know if we asked them up at this year. I don't know if anybody got in contact. Okay, we're at the 30-minute mark, and a happy new year to North Island Kingston. Well, I guess it's not 30 minutes for them if there's anybody there listening, but it's a 30-minute mark for most of us, so happy new year's, guys. Hey, Ken, I hope we're not making too big a mess of things.
Oh, it's got mic issues.
He's frantically screaming into his telephone right now.
Yeah, Ken, we're not.
And now he's figuring out the push-to-talk function on his client.
But everyone does the same thing. Why has Mumble jumped ahead in about versions this year? Like, I really haven't noticed too much difference in it. Despite the numbers going up. Like, it's gone from 1.2 to 0.3 to 1.2.8.
Well, it's the support for the new Opus client, you know, and Delwyn, at least, I don't know about this server. Delwyn told us that we didn't have the newer version with support for Opus, we wouldn't be able to get on. But when I look at my configuration, the slider no longer goes from speaks to stealth like it used to, but it's definitely on quality, definitely stuck there on self. So I don't know how you guys are hearing me, but apparently it's working. And I did try to do pinning or whatever to upgrade to a newer version of Mumble on Debian, and it got where it made my head hurt. And then Thistleweb joined us, you know, when I was using Plumble one night, and he says, "Well, I'm on Debian, and I'm able to talk on all the servers." So I tried it and realized, well, I didn't have to do anything. So I don't know how it's magically working, but apparently it is, because you guys should not be able to hear me.
I think the 1.2.3.4 or something works fine with the Opus one. Just normally I think it gotta be 1.2.4 or something to work. But yeah, I think there is an issue with that. I think you're fine if you're on 1.2.3. I think.
We'll see. I'm on 1.2.3-349.
Yeah, well, you should be fine. As long as I've got a point next to it, it works. So you should be okay. I actually, speaking of voice chat, I've been using Steam a lot more. Have you? Have you guys been chatting in Steam with voice chat? It's actually not too bad. I noticed they've made huge improvements to Steam with their chat options lately.
Yeah, since Steam's come out, I really haven't had a computer powerful enough for gaming. The one time I tried, it failed miserably. Of course, that went with everything else. But I thought, I'll do it the cheap way. I'll get an old quad core Core 2 Duo workstation. And this one I got, I guess it was a corporate workstation, had 8 gig of RAM, should have had everything I needed except the video card. I got a new low-end video card and stuck it in it, and it was never recognized. And some people told me, well, there's got to be a problem somewhere, because it should have been. But if you go in the tech support, they said, well, you know, you've got to have an up-to-date BIOS, and the BIOS for that motherboard, it hasn't been updated in 4 years, so that's why you can't see your brand new shiny video card.
Yeah, I have trouble with my BIOS. I haven't updated it for ages, actually. But I have issues. Graphic cards are annoying now, I mean, at the moment. To be honest, I'm just about to think of Intel graphics could be better, which I don't have installed, I don't think.
Well, I mean, it's plenty good for most stuff. I did a little playing around. I've got an AMD card in this machine, but I can't get accelerated graphics to work on it. So I called TuxRacer the other day and it won't even work. So you know, like I said, that's one of the reasons. I guess we lost Popey. I was going to give Ubuntu a compliment. Here that sometimes it's just easier to give in and go off the path of least resistance. So that's one of the things that I'm hoping installing Ubuntu instead of Debian is going to fix on this machine.
You probably Ubuntu does have more support for graphics cards and stuff like that. I think Debian can be a real pain, to be honest, to actually get working, and some Debian users are going to hate me now. But to actually get working just with cards and stuff. Have you tried MX-13? It's actually quite a nice little operating system if you just want a light Debian that's actually got a proper DVD installer and everything else. And that's actually not too bad. But most Ubuntu's would actually work a lot better, I think.
Yeah, like I said, I you know, after the fire this year, I was left with only the one computer my cousin gave me. And, you know, he is running XP, so he never liked it after he even got it. So,
are you still on Crunchbang?
Yeah, I'm on Crunchbang right now. Like I said,
Do you manage to get your NVIDIA installed at all? I've always had trouble with Crunchbang and NVIDIA. I've never ever installed properly.
Well, this one is AMD, and no, it doesn't seem to be recognized. I mean, it works.
Yeah.
It works for like YouTube video and such, but.
Yeah, that's your trouble. You haven't got your drivers. Is it a laptop? So it's old laptop. It's a laptop, is it? I take it.
Yeah, like I said, a lot of the things on this now. I've got the memory upgraded. And I did that the first things, but not when I didn't have it when I started. You know, I rather than beating Debian with a stick, I think probably the path of least resistance is to put Ubuntu on it.
Yeah, I would go with something lighter too, like Xubuntu, because it's just XSE is a lot lighter than Unity. So I wouldn't, if you've got a low-end system with the XFCE, I mean, XFCE is quite good now. It's not, I don't think it's too bad. And it's actually not too bad with Steam and stuff either. And you'll probably find the additional drivers, if you did have any, would pick up any drivers that you had. So I would actually recommend Xubuntu 14.4.1.
I would take a look at LXLE. I dug a laptop out of the trash a couple of weeks ago for my aging aunt who's looking for something. It was a dual core. I think it was a Centrino processor, 2 gigs of RAM, spinning iron platter disk. Put LXLE on it, had it boot straight into Chromium. And that was it. Oh, no, so I had to boot straight into Midori, and that was it. And that was actually a pretty decent system with pretty good looks.
Yeah, it's actually not too bad. Yeah, actually, I agree with you, actually. I actually think it is quite a good operating system. It's quite nice on older computers because LXLE doesn't actually take too much. LXDE doesn't take too much RAM. So, it's based. There's a 12.04 version as well. And there's a 24.5 version, and there's a 14.04.1 version as well of that. So that would be a good, and you'd find that would be a much better looking operating system than Crunchbang, just with its Voyager background, just with its background changer that it's actually got the background. It's actually not too bad.
No, it's a decent operating system. I sometimes, when I need a graphical VM, I take that one as the graphical shell on my VM to have, you know, some kind of desktop environment should I need it. And I've installed it on a couple of systems. I'm very happy with that. It's elegant but light. It's not light to the point where you think you're working on a system from the 90s. So that's a good thing. I love the geekiness of Crunchbang, don't get me wrong, but... sometimes, you know, a computer has to work for you and not the other way around.
Yeah, my only issue with Crunchbang is that I don't think that's been worked on for a while. Well, I've heard rumors that the creator of it has actually taken on a long break, and he only does updates when they actually move the Debians over. So, I mean, the trouble is it's on a really old kernel. You're fine. I mean, that's why I think Nightwise is right where LXLE would be a better bet. And it's reasonably stable. It's not too bad for operating system. I didn't have too much trouble with it when I tried it. It actually works quite well. But it's light. Could be another one that you could try as well if you wanted a nice XFCE for Ubuntu, which has a nice, it's not too bad. But, I recommend LXLE as well.
Well, I hate to take Crunchbang to task too much because I'm sure Cornomal is going to be joining us sometime during the show. He always does, and he may be listening already. So, there's a lot of stuff I like about Crunchbang. Just that path of least resistance is going to be going with the Ubuntu-based system. Now,
if Crunchbang came with a freaking graphical NVIDIA installer, I would freaking use it. It just doesn't. I've always had trouble installing NVIDIA on Crunchbang.
Well, all while you guys were talking, you know, you were talking about Zubuntu, and probably if I was going to pick a spin of Ubuntu, I'd go with Lubuntu or, like you said, LXLE. Does LXLE support Steam very well? Or
yeah, it's fine. You'll have no issues at all with it. Even the 64-bit version works fine. It basically runs off the same Ubuntu installer, and it's all good. All pretty much there. The other one that you might want to try is Linux Lite 2.2, I believe, if you want an Ubuntu-based XFCE. Yeah, I mean, if you want an LXDE, then, I would recommend. And by the way, Peppermint OS 5 is a buggy as crap at the moment. I'd stick with the LXDE at the moment. LXLE, much more stable.
Okay. Try that if it's got Steam support. I don't. Like I said, I've got an AMD card in this. I don't know if it's fast enough to actually do any real gaming on this thing.
You'd be fine. Actually, I found gaming in the LXDE actually quite good. It doesn't use a lot of memory. It's not using a lot of RAM. It's got pretty much all the programs you actually want actually pre-installed. That's good. You've got a background changer. You've got for your Windows, which normally doesn't happen now. It's LXDE. You've got a couple radio players, I think it's using Rhythmbox, actually. But, it's pretty easy. It's got a nice... I think it's got a nice bunch of software actually included. If anything, let's say it's too much, but that's just me.
Well, what I had set up, like I said, this is one of the things that went in the house fire I had, and it may actually have been too old for what LXLE is intended to support. I had an old P4. I had all these from the school, these old Dell computers. And I pulled a hard drive out of another one because they were only 30 gig and put them both in there and set up parity with Ubuntu installed on one and LXLE on the other. And I was going to do a benchmark, and there is one benchmark application for Linux, I understand, and I know it's been a year ago, probably I did it, and that's why I never got around to it, because everybody said the learning curve for the benchmark application was pretty high. But I did this right after LXLE came out, and I tried to compare on the same system, is there any kind of measurable performance increase, or just using Ubuntu? But, you know, I'm thinking probably that LXLE is probably trying to target, quote, old systems, your old Core 2 series rather than a P4.
Yeah, you probably, actually, I think they are. But it does work on newer systems as well, but you're right. But, yeah, if you're running Crunchbang, then I think LXLE is quite a jump up. It's just, you probably wouldn't notice too much in usage of memory. I don't think it uses that much RAM, so it's nice, got a nice conky on it too, if you know, a nice conky manager and stuff on it as well. I find that annoying.
One of the things that I found during my experience this year is I was looking for something to put on an old netbook that I had, and I found a distro called Chromixium, which is basically...
Actually, I did something on that too. It was quite good. It's like a Chrome OS clone. You're right. I quite like that, actually.
The thing I liked about it was that it looked okay. It had a very non-intrusive desktop interface. It came with very few apps, but you could install them. So what I did is I installed the basic Chromixium with Chromium, and then just added a couple of apps, offline apps that I didn't that I needed, and that was my OS. And the great thing was about it: the less clutter and applications were on the OS, the more productive it became to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I did the same thing. I really liked the operating system. It would be one of my newest operating systems in my top five that I actually liked. And that is Chromium OS. And he did a couple extra versions after I tried it too. So he's done a couple more updates since. But it was a very nice Chrome OS look. He's got all the Chrome OS stuff in there. He's just configured Plant quite well. It's an open box. But I did some gaming on it. Like, I tried Football Manager, it worked fine with Steam. I installed Simple Circle, everything was working fine on it. It was actually quite good, and I felt it quite nice to actually use.
So what I'm hearing here all is that an operating system with fewer applications and fewer clutter is actually better than operating systems that come prepackaged with the kitchen sink and the neighbor's kitchen sink and the neighbor across the street's kitchen sink. Is that something you guys agreed on?
Oh, I don't know about that. You hear, like, Slackware that comes on a DVD, they say, well, you know, it comes with everything, so you don't need to worry about the fact that there's not a package manager. There are package managers for Slackware, but they're saying, oh, just go with the current install and don't worry about updating anything. Of course, perhaps you probably want to keep the kernel up to date, so just for security. So if you've got the drive space, no, I'm not sure I'm saying I want a system that has small hard drive footprint. Of course, you know, this current machine I have, I think it's only got a 500 gig hard drive, but I deal with that by making sure my media either goes out on the network or is stored on the attached USB drive. So if all you're doing is your applications and your correspondence, your documents and stuff like that, you can get away with a fairly small hard drive. And I was doing the same thing back when I had SSDs. Of course, you had to be, you know, you had to trim everything down.
The thing that I keep wondering about is in a time where installing applications using PPAs or either a software manager is so convenient, why are we still pre-packaging a lot of applications by default with a distro, ending up with multiple spins of that distro because everybody wants a different set of applications? Why not come out with some kind of base operating system and a very easy way to make a selection of what you want on there? Kind of like I do when I install a Windows system. I just install the base operating system and then run like Ninite. I tag what I want to install by default. Automatically, it gets installed and I'm done.
Well, I've made the argument before. There's a lot of distros that I wish were just a package that you could install. I mean, it's just somebody's different idea and different tweaks to desktop. Sometimes the same desktop that you can already install from the repos, but just their own tweaks and their own idea of the software that needs to go along with it. And I always wonder, well, if it's Ubuntu based or whatever, and I'm already running Ubuntu, it would be nice if I was interested in going with that distro, if they just had a package that I can install, customize Ubuntu and come up with their idea of how everything should work and try it out that way, rather than having to be a whole different spin. But as long as I don't run out of hard drive space, I'm not really worried about having multiple browsers or something. You know, I've got all three browsers. Well, shouldn't say all three, but I've, because there's more than three browsers for Linux, obviously. But I've got Firefox, Chrome, and Chromium, and I usually use Chrome and Chromium when I don't want to open up my 100 windows that I'm too lazy to close on Firefox, and I just want to get into something quick. And you know, I don't need my stored passwords for or anything like that. That I'll click on Chrome or Chromium. But I'm not sure I'm that concerned about filling up hard drive space, at least until the root partition gets full and things start to get wonky until I fix it. I've had that before on my SSD.
Yeah, for me, I just don't. I'm starting to require less and less and less locally installed applications, but that's because I've got a cross-platform workflow anyway, because I switch from a Mac to a PC to a Linux machine to a Chromebook and still want to continue to do my stuff. So I've kind of tweaked my workflows to not rely on any OS-specific applications. Hence, all the OS-specific applications that I get, I go like, well, do I still really, really need them?
Well, yeah, because we're getting more and more to the point where it seems like for a lot of our workflow, all we really need is a Chromebook. I mean, shoot, I remember the times, well, first 15 years or 10 years at least of owning a computer, I didn't have a connect. Well, maybe it wasn't quite that long. I didn't have a internet connection at all. And then for, you know, 5, 6, 8 years, whatever it was only dial-up. So it wasn't much use. I couldn't participate in podcasts or video.
I think we lost you there, 5150.
Can you hear me? I still hear you guys.
Okay, you dropped out. You were saying that you just had dial-up.
Yeah, I mean, when I started with computers, of course, I didn't have any internet connection at all. Then for years, I just had dial-up. And then I had a slow, so-called broadband connection. But really, the first thing I turn on when I turn the computer on is I bring up my browser, and 90% of what I'm doing in the browser. And usually the only other two applications that I have up are a terminal and a file manager. And the only time really I run anything else is if I'm doing podcasting, get into Mumble, or if I'm doing HPR, I get into Audacity. So you're right. We're probably coming to the time where we're going to be doing everything in the browser.
I've been thinking about something I wanted to write an article about, but I didn't really get down to it because I couldn't really organize my thoughts around it. But I had thought about how many of the Linux podcasts were raving about the Chromebook. And one of the things I thought about is that it might be a sign of Linux fatigue, of people who love the Chromebook for its simplicity and its success in the Linux world or in the Linux user community, is because of people are tired of fixing things and just want it to work. And for them, for many of them, either consciously or not consciously, they started to see the Chromebook as, it runs Linux, so it's okay. And it just works. And that's why I love it. And suddenly I saw a lot of people who are really into the whole EFF/Stallman camp going around and singing praise of the Chromebook, which is as proprietary as they come, because I think that they were feeling fatigued by constantly having to patch, fix, and tinker with things. How do you stand on those things?
Oh, you know, I think I'm into Linux because I like to tinker and customize things. I wouldn't be, I got used to it as a gamer. Of course, I don't game hardly much anymore. But, and of course, you know, when I started gaming, you had to tinker the heck out of stuff just to get it to come up and run. I mean, the game didn't tell you. Do you use, back in the days when you had to do extended or expanded memory, and I used to have things like one particular game, I'd have to have a custom boot floppy to get the memory right just to get into that game. So yeah, I'm a tinkerer from way back, so that doesn't frighten me at all. Now, sometimes when you break stuff, like I was explaining before, that I've managed to somehow break the connectivity to my DNS server on this machine, and that would be frustrating if I wasn't planning on reinstalling the OS in the very near future. Of course, probably 6 months from now, I'm still going to be on the same system, but I would like to have a backup computer so I could do connectivity. So I wouldn't have to worry about, okay, I'm going to take this computer down for a day and reinstall the operating system. But, you know, a lot of the stuff that I would be worried about, like, being able to participate in podcasts, I can't do on Chromebook. You know, there's no, at least through the browser, there's no Mumble. There's nothing, no Audacity. Well, I guess you could probably find something online or locally to record voice, but that just seems unnatural to me when you can run those applications locally. I mean, if I were to get something like a Chromebook, the first thing I would do would probably be go in developer mode and put Ubuntu or whatever Linux is available on it. And then I would find myself...
Testing, 1, 2, 3.
A, B.
Nice.
But like I said, yes, I, if I were I to have a Chromebook, the first thing I would run into is storage problems. We were talking about this on Kernel Panic a few weeks ago. We were talking about small footprint computers and Chromebooks, and I said, well, you know, I can go online and buy for the $200 minimum, or even $150 that I'd have to spend on a Chromebook, I can buy a small laptop that's multi-core that's going to run circles around it. And SoundChaser came back with the argument, well, see, you don't understand. You can use a Chromebook for 8 hours without having to plug in the power. And I'm like, well, yeah, most of the time, though, even if I'm taking a laptop with me to a work site, I'm taking the power adapter with me. It'd be nice not to have to do that. But most of the time, or very rarely do I take the laptop to a work site and then, you know, have to use it for more than a couple hours.
I can jump in on that. I've been doing a research on a Chromebook for a week for the next episode of Nightwise.com, which we just recorded. And one of the things that surprised me about the Chromebook was the fact that they said, yeah, it has awesome battery time. And I went like, so what? But the ability to pick up a laptop and use it as if you use your phone, hence open the lid, it works, and you don't plug it in all day, is something that is surprisingly addictive. I can tell you that.
Well, I can certainly see the use case for it. The trouble is, if I am out servicing stuff, it's gonna be Windows computers on a Windows network, and I need something that, you know, I can log into the Windows server like with an RDP client or something like that.
I've sideloaded mine with Linux to fill up the gaps where Chrome OS fails, and for 80% of the things it doesn't. I switch to Linux where I have, you know, the power tools that I need, like an SSH, like something like FileZilla or a file manager or Mumble or Skype or those few applications that I use offline. But what I found is that there are not that many applications that I need to have on there to get stuff done. The combination of having both Chrome OS and Linux in a device that has such good battery life and just works when you open it up, that is something that is pretty nifty. I would love to have to find me a Linux laptop that does that. Just have a small footprint, not too expensive, fast, light, and work 100%, especially when it comes to Hibernate. I've started to hate having to boot up my computer.
Well, let me break in and say greetings and Happy New Year's to Australia. And again, one of those five more, I don't know what the five more are, but Melbourne, Sydney, Canberra, Honlera. Somebody needs to teach me how to pronounce that last one at least. So greetings and Happy New Year's. I expect to see some of the Aussies jump in here pretty quick. I also have a note here. We're going to be doing this reminder not every hour on the hour, but a few times during the podcast, that Bruce Patterson from DistroWatch is looking for a new host for the DistroWatch Weekly podcast. So if someone wants to be the host of a podcast, that's a great way to get into it. Every once in a while, it seems like they need a new host, because I know of several people who have done that. You know, I think it's pretty much reading a script that's provided. So you really don't have to do anything but sit there and read, I don't think. I've never been the host, so I don't know. But somebody's looking for something to do to help out, or if they want to get started on podcasting, I can't think of a better, easier way. It's just that the guys associated with DistroWatch don't feel that they have the time to be doing that podcast right now. So I'm certain from the contact, I don't want to give out anybody's email, but I'm certain there's contact information on DistroWatch, which is just a great site. And thank you guys for who do DistroWatch for, and Bruce and all you folks for keeping that up to date, because that's always my go-to place if I'm looking for the latest version of a distribution. And respond to your comment, Nightwise. I've sort of gone the other way with shutting my laptop down, because this is the, you know, at this rental house, I'm using one of the two bedrooms as an office and the other one actually sleep. And this is the first time forever that I've had my electronics in a different room than the one that I sleep in. I, you know, really, I'm enjoying that, not having so many blinking lights and all that. Of course, I still have the phone and a few other electronics. Well, I guess the phone's probably the only computing device that I haven't plugged in the room where I sleep. But so I'd gotten into the habit of just letting the laptop sit there and idle and run open all night plugged in. And that bit me because it is probably a 4-year-old laptop at least, and the fan wore out. So I was down for a week, you know, on my backup system while I ordered a fan. Actually, it's a good thing I procrastinated. I did take the old fan out, and I had it lubricated. I was going to stick it back in because I figured, well, it's going to be another 2 weeks before I get the new fan from the Far East, and then I didn't get it back together because I didn't feel like working that night, and then the new fan showed up in the post the next day. So I wanted to replace the thermal paste, so that was, you know, I ordered that off Newegg, and I spent money to get it there. Of course, it was over a weekend, so even though I did the rush shipping, it didn't show up till the following Monday. But had I put it together, I would have had to just take it back apart and plug the new fan in. So, you know, I've gone from my habit of shutting the PC down when I'm not using it to leaving it sitting there running 24/7, and then going back to, well, maybe I should give the PC a rest once in a while. So I don't always shut it down, but sometimes I do now.
Yeah, when it comes to my laptop, I'm a lid open, lid shut kind of guy. I love the fact that both on my Macs, I have that option to just open it up and start working and close it back down. I like that. I didn't have a good hibernate suspend or resume suspend function on my Linux laptop, which was an IBM, which was a Lenovo Twist, and that was, even though I had an SSD, I found that a little annoying.
Yeah, even though I'm still connected, I'm getting that thing where I'm not connected to the DNS server and I can't update the show notes. So I've got my other recorder going. So I am going to, if it doesn't come back presently, I'm going to shut down my original recording. Who knows if it's messed up or not? I've got the recording going on the Pi now. And of course,
Okay, I'll give you some time there. Is there, meantime, anybody else new in the room? We had a new somebody coming in. B, are you still here?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm actually using my N900 to be on Mumble right now, and I'm trying to get a microphone working on my little laptop.
Oh, you sound okay on the N900. that'll give 5150 some a chance to make some dead air. B, where are you from? What are you doing?
Well, I'm Brooklyn, New York. I'm just staying up all night to, you know, reset my sleep schedule. So it's, what, 8 a.m.? I have been up since midday yesterday.
So what kind of geekery projects are you into?
I mean, I'm a Slacker. I've been using Slackware for, I don't know, I think close to 10 years now. I mean, I work in a school that just, a bunch of professors are just going to throw me random projects and I just figure stuff out. So I have no, I don't know. I like to code. I don't care what.
And you're still working on your N900? How old is that machine by now?
Oh, the phone, it was created in 2009, but I mean, this is the second one and I have a third one, but backup just when this one dies, because I have a hate for all Android and iPhone devices now. They just, it's not the same.
I've always been fascinated by the N900. What makes it tick? I mean, what makes it so incredibly special?
I mean, well, first of all, you get it, and it's Linux. it's Debian. It's really Debian. You know, you open the terminal and you see, you know, it's everything. All the commands you want, a keyboard that you can use, which I don't see happening either. In all of our new phones, nobody has a keyboard anymore. It's all touchscreen.
Yeah, the BlackBerry Classic is coming out with a keyboard. They're trying to bring it back because people still crave for it.
Wait, who's making a keyboard?
BlackBerry is bringing out the BlackBerry Classic.
Oh, well, I mean, but that's BlackBerry, right? So are they, is it going to be Android? They're not going to run Android now. It's still going to run its own BlackBerry software, right?
Yeah, but I got it configured in a way that you can run Android apps on it because there are only, I don't know, 2.5 developers developing on the BlackBerry platform.
Yeah, that's very true.
So who else do we have in the room here? Anyone else want to speak up?
Okay, I'm back. You guys were talking just a minute ago.
Yeah, we were talking about B's N900. B, what do you do on that machine aside from Mumble, which sounds pretty awesome?
I mean, I actually just got Mumble installed. This thing pretty much runs on the developer repositories. And I mean, I haven't received updates in a long time. I mean, at one point, I remember nobody was, you know, they probably made this phone last like 3 years after Nokia gave up the community with the CSSU updates is what they had. And they continually updated applications. And now I'm pretty much using the latest developer, you know, tools that are there, which supposedly is risky because stuff crashes. But I've been able to keep my N900 running for a month without a reboot, without a crash. I mean, I don't go nuts and run, you know, like 100 applications at the same time. But it runs amazingly, especially for a phone that's now 5 years about.
Is it safe to say that the N900 is a computer that that you can put in your pocket?
Yes. It's the only one, too. Hold on. Let me see if I can keep chatting while I put the Mumble app in the background. Let me try that. Hold on. Okay. Can you still hear me now?
Loud and clear.
Awesome. Which means I can keep surfing or doing anything else I need while still talking on Mumble. This is amazing. See, this is why I love this device. Stuff like that. I mean, this phone is as old as the first iPhone. And the first iPhone couldn't multitask for the life of, you know, they didn't even know what multitasking was. They used to minimize everything. And now...
I don't know, B. Seems like we kind of lost you in the middle of the...
No. I let go of the button. It's just, you know, I personally have been using this phone. I can't leave. I can't use Android. Every time I use Android, I had an S2 at one point. I had it rooted and working. And then at a certain point, you know, I think I did it because I kept using CyanogenMod to the latest release. And eventually my phone just started working horribly. It, you know, had problems. Had reboots, got hot, and I mean, I blame myself because I like to stay on, you know, the latest nightly release from CyanogenMod, or maybe a not too far behind, but it still doesn't compare to this phone. There's no way.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you've got what everybody's been looking for. I mean, there was the failed, call it Vivaldi. That's not Vivaldi. Experiment from the KDE folks to get KDE running on a tablet and updating applications to be touch aware. Of course, now that we're coming up with touch aware full size screens for PCs, at some point, all your Linux applications are probably, or most of them, are going to evolve so that you can use them either with a keyboard and a mouse or with touch, but we're not there yet. I mean, this is something I've wanted since Android came out or smartphones came out, actual Linux on a mobile device. And unfortunately, all the attempts have come out, it is, well, they're to keep the cost of the device down, they're going with... hardware that's a generation or two old, compared to, well, why don't you just write software that I can overwrite my Android phone with and have real Linux there. But the problem is most Linux desktop applications are really not touch friendly. Of course, you've got the full keyboard and everything, so it really doesn't matter. And unfortunately, there's just not a mainstream market for what you and I want.
Yeah, this is true. I mean, I see the reason why, you know, why Apple is so popular, because I mean, I'm in New York, so I remember one day I was sitting on the train, and next to me is a man, has to be at least 70 years old, and he pulls out an iPhone out of his pocket and just starts listening to music videos and looking through things. And I mean, I've tried teaching, you know, older people how to use a computer, and the fact that a company has managed to pull that off, you know, they get respect for that. But at the same time, because I love having everything as open as possible, it I get angry at the same time.
Sorry, just copying the server information into Oncast Planet for someone.
One of the things I've noticed when I tried running Ubuntu on my Nexus 7 is that it was for me a little bit of a disappointment. I was using I tried both the early touch versions and the original of Ubuntu that you could run on a Nexus, and at the time neither of them seemed really ready to replace the experience that we have on the N900.
Yep. Also, I mean, the only other project, there's two that are important. One is Replicant, and that's Android without any non-free software. But I mean, there's very few devices that run, and a lot of the things don't run because Wi-Fi usually doesn't work without any non-free blobs, and neither does Bluetooth. And then the other one is actually Neo 900, which is, they're still doing this, and it still looks like it's a success. They're taking the N900, they're going to use the shell, they're going to update the processor, update the RAM, and change a bunch of things.
Yeah, that's the only thing that I've seen over the last year. One of the things I remember is a speech by Ricardo Semler where he says, our technology evolves, but our behavior does not. And he said, if we take a look at Henry Ford's car 100 years ago, it had four wheels, a steering wheel, and two seats. So now we're 100 years later, and our cars have four wheels, a steering wheel, and two seats. So the net cost of innovation, although the things goes faster and is safer, is that the basic concept has not changed. And that has nothing to do with technology, but the way we wish to interact with technology. It is human behavior that has designed the way a car looks right now, and not technology. And it is human behavior that is dictating how we interact with computers, not the revolution in touch interfaces.
All I know is I have a phone that's almost Stallman approved. So, I mean, he'd use it, but he wouldn't talk to anybody on it.
Yeah, I think I know about the N900. I think you're maybe reaching a bit on that one. Is the N900 all open software? I mean, that's the trouble. Well, that's a trouble phone of any kind. You're always going to have that proprietary. Well, I guess that's what you're getting at. You're always going to have that proprietary chip and firmware to connect to the cell network. They're never going to let you get around that.
Yeah, I think that's the only part, right, that has to be closed because it's in the FCC guidelines. Not FCC. I think it's FCC. Because if it's open, it'd make it way too easy for somebody to disrupt service. I think something of that sort.
Oh, yeah. There's been those experiments with the people who build a peer-to-peer system to set up a cell network, but they've got to do it inside a shielded building. Because it's not legal for them to have anything that can possibly connect to a cell network that they didn't buy. Okay, it's coming time of the day. Folks ought to be waking up. I know Riddlebox is looking for hardware so he can connect and to mumble and talk to us. But we've been talking through the night here. It's about time for some folks to perhaps wake up and join us. Of course. Well, I mean, on the other side of the pond, you know, you guys are about in the middle of the day.
Roger that. 2:21 in the afternoon here.
And we are coming up on at the 30-minute mark for us. We're coming up with to yet another New Year's Eve greeting. Happy New Year's greeting. Well, here I see Peter 64 on Oddcast Planet. I don't see him talking, but he's got a computer connected, so I don't know why he's not in here talking to us.
Yeah, I think we are the sole three hosts of Dead Air Radio at the moment.
Yeah, you know, if I had time not to talk, I would certainly go into Hash on Cast Planet and start shaming people into joining us. Man, I haven't been on this time of the morning before. I think I have. Well, usually I will be on for a few minutes when it starts and then go back to sleep. So maybe this is the dead air part of the show normally. But I've been on this show in years past. At least when I try to join, you can't hardly get in a word edgewise. So, come on, folks, it's time to jump in, so at least some of us can step away from the microphone for a minute if we need to.
Roger that. We are running into the late afternoon. I still have some stuff to arrange because we are going to have some festivities tonight, fairly light, but I'm working behind the computer and keeping an eye on the chat in the meantime, but... there is life as I know it out there awaiting me.
Yeah, I know. Well, it gets it's about almost 7:30 here. When it comes to about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm going to have to jump up and go out to the farm for a while, and I'll be back till near dinner time. So I would hope we can get stuff rolling along here by then where I can step away. I don't want there to be dead air, but there's things that have to be done that aren't here. So I'm hoping we can get a few more people to step in.
Okay, just a quick shout out. Is there anybody still in the Hacker Public Radio chat room, like Dude Man and stuff, who are still listening and still awake?
Well, Kevin Wisher said he was going to join us when he woke up, so he's not. I guess he's not up yet. I guess Dude Man stepped away.
All right, I'll be back on my through a computer in a second. Sorry for interrupting.
No, not at all. I'm just glad to hear you're still there.
Hey, 5150, this is the part of the show where we turn this into a cooking show.
Well, I tell you what, I think this is something Kevin has just installed over on the Linux Lugcast channel on our channel bot. I think it's .fd, and anything starts with F is, I think, is bad language, but it gives you a link to a random recipe from...
Oops, you dropped out there.
No, it's just I hate to have the control key down while I'm trying to do anything, because it usually does something unexpected.
Yeah, and cooking is the worst subject you can talk to me about. I am terrible. I burn hot water.
All right, how about now?
A little bit of a ground hum there, but doable.
Louder, quieter, I mean...
No, you're just right. That's good.
All right, cool.
Meanwhile, 5150 is desperately looking up cooking recipes. Found anything yet?
Well, I was just going to scroll back till I saw the last one. Just reissue the command in the channel. I can tell you where it goes to.
So, B, you've joined us from a computer?
Yeah, now I'm on my X60.
And what kind of a machine is that, spec-wise and OS-wise?
Also, I mean, I have two laptops. One of them is a T430S, which is, I believe it's Ivy dual core 2.6. And this X60S is 10 years old, so I'm not even sure. 1.6 gigahertz Pentium M or something like that. But I mean, this thing's also on Slack 32-bit, and this is actually LibreBoot, so it's completely open. I wiped the BIOS. This thing is awesome.
And what are your main activities on that machine? What do you do on it mostly?
I mean, this is the machine I take to work with me. So, I mean, to surf the internet, to check my email, to, you know, if I need to run a random command, I know I can always do it. If I need to give somebody a bootable flash drive of something, I can always use DD and pretty much everyday basic device.
What are the most favorite apps that you use?
What do you mean, on Linux?
Yep.
I mean, considering just the basic stuff, XChat, Firefox, Thunderbird, VLC, and the terminal window. That's pretty much as simple as all I need.
Okay, cool. 50, I hope you can jump in because I have to go. I wish you guys a great new year and good luck with the show.
Darn it, likewise, I was literally two steps away from the bathroom.
Hey guys, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, you got a little, fish tank sound in the background, but it's no worse than normal audio on Tilt.
Well, there is a fish tank behind me.
Well, that might explain it then. Well, I tell you what, you came in just in time because I just need to step away for just a minute, guys. I'll be right back.
All right.
No problem. So where's everybody from?
I'm from New York.
I'm in lovely Illinois.
Lovely Illinois. How's the weather in Illinois right now?
Cold.
I'd say probably worse than here.
Well, I haven't even looked at the temperature, but it's been cold. We haven't had any snow or anything. Well, we did a little bit, but nothing lately.
New York hasn't gotten any yet, and hopefully we don't get any. Snow here turns ugly too fast.
Well, at least you're not Buffalo.
Yeah. I don't know, but it's heavy snow, but it's not as city-like of an area. So, you know, here it's like day two, it becomes slush, and you don't want to walk in it at all.
Yeah, I live pretty close to St. Louis, Missouri, and that's how that becomes, too. It's just nasty.
What distro you run?
Right now, I've got Fedora on one laptop and Ubuntu on another one. I've become pretty boring in the years of using Linux.
Why? What do you mean by boring?
I don't like to mess with things anymore.
Oh, I kind of have that, but at the same time, I like to update things way too much, so eventually that fails and I have to fix something.
That's why I rarely got into Arch. Arch just seems like it's dangerous to me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on Slackware, so I pretty much gave up package management a long time ago, and I've been fine ever since.
Yes, Slackware is actually the first distro I ever ran back in 2000. So I started with Slackware, then I jumped to Red Hat, and bounced back and forth for a long time before I settled on Ubuntu and Fedora.
Ubuntu, though, why? Why not use like Debian or something that's, you know, less intrusive?
It's just easy.
You see, that's, I mean, I'll give it to them. I'd rather have somebody use Ubuntu than use Windows and learn some Linux.
Yeah, it's definitely better. It really has everything that I want, and most things are packaged for it right away, so you don't have to worry and compile and everything. Like I said, I've become real lazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's in a I'm not in a company environment where I have to use Linux, so I don't know how that would work if a company uses it, because I can't see them using Slackware. Even though I've heard people running Slackware servers, you know, without package management, it's suicide. Even sometimes I hit a point where it's like, okay, I gotta trace way too many dependencies just to get this one application working.
In the company I work for, if you're running Linux, it's gonna be CentOS. Unfortunately, we do use GroupWise, so there are some SUSE our SLED servers out there, but for the most part, it's Red Hat or CentOS if they don't want to pay for the license.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Closest, I mean, it's pretty much Red Hat, right? I've never really used Red Hat or Cent. One of my friends uses Cent, but I don't know. Is it almost the same thing?
Yeah, it's really close. And if I remember right, CentOS is now part of Red Hat. I may have that wrong. They may have gotten somebody else. But I thought I read somewhere that CentOS was brought into Red Hat.
No, I don't think it's quite that simple. I was listening to Bad Voltage. It's not a recent cast. I was batch listening to all the ones I've missed over pretty much all fall. And they had one of the people that's a Red Hat employee who's involved in CentOS. And the way he explained it is that Red Hat has joined the CentOS project, which what that means is that they have Red Hat is paying people to develop for CentOS. And, you know, the actual effect of it is, instead of CentOS being, you know, 6 months behind current rel, you know, I mean, it's always pretty much a one-to-one ratio, as I understand it. You know, same thing as rel, but it used to be it took them, you know, 4, 5, 6 months to catch up to the current version of rel, and now it's pretty much the same day. You know, there's a new version of rel, and CentOS is 100% compatible. And I think what that is you know, Red Hat trying to catch the market of those people saying, well, I don't need rel, I don't need to pay for rel license. I'll just install CentOS. And I think they're waiting for at least big mid-sized companies to do that. They're waiting for the local admin to get in over his head and have his bosses yelling at him because, hey, you know, our systems aren't working. Why aren't you fixing them? And then the local admin going, so, well, we're going to have to give up and buy a rel license. And when, you know, so it's advantageous probably for Red Hat when he does do that and call him up and say, hey, I want to buy 50 seats of rel and server and all that, they don't have to spend much time with him on the phone trying to bring his CentOS installation up to compatibility with rel. That's my thinking, at least. And the other thing they said is, you know, the difference between CentOS and rel, and I imagine you have to probably be a fairly big customer, but if you've got a Red Hat license and you come to them and say, well, this peripheral, you know, like something most people wouldn't have, like trying to think of the writing screens they now have in the schools, and I had this in my mind the other day. It's in Promethean. Let's say you're a school and you're using Promethean boards, and I don't know if they're supported by Linux or not. Promethean board. But let's say it's a, you know, an unusual piece of hardware. You know, I assume if you're a big enough customer of rel, I mean, what the guy who's doing representing said, well, if you've got something, a piece of hardware that doesn't work, we'll work with you on writing drivers for it. Where you don't get that at CentOS. You can't call up CentOS and say, hey, write me a driver. At least not, get it, you know, if you don't find somebody that's interested just doing that for you. So I imagine if you've got one rel license and you say, hey, I can't get my webcam to work, write a driver and fix it, I doubt if you're going to get a lot of traction that way. And I'm sorry, when I stepped away, I missed a greeting, and so greetings to Australia, Adelaide, and Broken Hill. 10 minutes too late.
Hey, 50, I noticed you're running looks like a Pi bot in the room as well. What else are you running on that Raspberry Pi?
Well, I explained that. I hate to take up another slot in the room, though that doesn't seem to be an issue right now. The reason that I did that for my recording, I had it set up prior. I explained this earlier in the show, but you guys weren't around. The other day I decided that whatever DNS server Cox Cable was using wasn't responding fast enough, and I tried to go through the graphical network manager and supplant it with the Google DNS, which worked great for about 5 minutes, and then all of a sudden I wasn't getting DNS at all. And so I switched it back to take the automatic DNS, but that works. But every once in a while, I seem on this laptop, I seem to lose my connection to the DNS server. So any connections that I have open continue to work. If I try to click on another web page, even some web page I already have open, or I try to update the schedule which I have open, it with show notes, it doesn't work out for me. So about an hour ago, I had to do an up down or down up on my Ethernet card to get DNS connectivity back. So if anybody's wondering why I've got two connections open in the mumble room, that's why. To answer your question, right now, I was kind of disappointed in the media facilities on the Pi. I think I'm going to probably be looking at one or two of the Odroids. But right now, I'm almost using it as an additional screen. I've got it hooked up on my 50-inch TV in the office. I bought two TVs because I thought, Dad and I might want to watch different channels. And the trouble is, though, I've talked about this on Linux Plugcast. In this house that I've got rented, it's got finished basements, so I can't. There's a cable running in this room, and I can't get to the other end of it. And it's not connected anywhere to anything. And I can't make holes to run a new cable in here. So I got this wireless deal, Action Tech, off of Amazon. It's actually using Wi-Fi. The other end of it is on a splitter on the cable, and then the other box is in here. And what's supposed to do is the two boxes are supposed to supposed to talk to each other, and so I don't have to run a physical cable in here to the other TV. And I talked about this on Linux Lugcast. It worked great the first 3 days. I didn't watch any TV on it, and I really haven't got it. I'm sitting there watching it flash, trying to make a connection. It hasn't worked since. So I've got, pretty much I'm using the 50-inch in here as another monitor. I've got the Pi connected to it. And I've got Raspbian installed, but I wanted to try playing with a tiling window manager, and so I installed i3. But so right now I've got Xchat open on one side and the Mumble running on the other side. Usually I run Xchat on the Pi. And other than that, usually not much but a file manager and a terminal open, though I closed those so I'd have enough memory to run Mumble and to record the show. But I'm not really using the tiling window manager as intended, because I've got Synergy installed on both machines, so I'm using the laptop keyboard and mouse to control the Pi most of the time. So that's really what I'm using it for.
Yeah, I got a Raspberry Pi for Christmas and got Raspbian on it. And right now I have Motion running with a webcam, and it connects back to my ZoneMinder. So I've got an extra camera in my house now. Also, I put I forget the software. It's like SharePoint or SharePoint or something with it. Actually, will share or create AirPrint for my wife's iPhone and iPad and everything, so she can print to my print server now. And also there's an AirPlay app that I have on it, so she can send audio up to our TV now, which we can do everything like that with the Chromecast. But since I have a new toy, I decided I need to make everything work.
Yeah, I guess people have, I was saying earlier this evening, I guess people have luck with the XBMC version of Raspbian that's got to put in getting video. But I can't even do Yahoo video very well. I was talking earlier, OMX player, something like that. That's a very, very light player. If I download a video, I can watch it. So that seems to work fairly well, though it's not very responsive if you want to quit out of it or anything. And it doesn't run in a window. It just takes over a chunk of the screen and uses it. I've looked at installing. I figured I wanted more of a desktop experience. I was going to install XBMC on top of Raspbian, but it looks like it takes about 1,000 steps to do that. So, and no better than it is playing video. I don't think I'll do it. But I hadn't thought of that use. Redbox Dude Man and I were talking an hour or so ago about. You know, IP cameras connected to ZoneMinder, but really, if you just had a fixed position camera, you'd probably get away a lot cheaper. I'm not sure of the image quality using a webcam plus a Pi rather than spending $100 on a dedicated IP camera.
Yeah, I think it depends on your webcam. You know, I manage a video conferencing infrastructure for the company I work for. So I've got HD cameras, you know, webcams all over the place. And I've been meaning to grab one of my $300 webcams and bring it home and see if the image quality is any better. But I've just got a $50 Logitech webcam on it right now. And it's not terrible, but, you know, it's grainy. So, you know, I'm hoping if I put a more expensive camera on it, then it'll get better, but it's just a play toy. It's not something, you know, I'm not using it for security in my house or anything. It's just to say that I've done it.
Right. Well, that's why I wanted to go with the Raspberry Pi, is because there's, you know, there's literally probably 100 people playing with the Pi for every one person who has one of the alternate single board computers. So there's just so much more out there. If you want to know how to do something with the Pi, no matter what it is, probably an article out there on the internet someplace. And with anything else, even though there's a lot higher performance boards out there for the same money, we were talking earlier about hard kernels, Odroid C1, which is pretty much pin compatible and form factor compatible with the B+. For $35 and a quad core GPU and a quad core CPU, you know. But if you want to do something like, say, take that Alibaba touchscreen and plug it into it, which even on a Raspberry Pi takes proprietary, but when you get the screen, you got to also get their version of Raspbian, because the kernel's not the same. It's got to have support for the for the touchscreen in the kernel. If I were to do the same thing, take that same screen and plug it in to the Odroid, I'm sure it would plug in, but I'm gonna have to run around and find my own drivers to make it work. So that's kind of the difference between the Raspberry Pi and anything else. I want to have one to be able to do that, take advantage of all that online support. But there's a lot more powerful computers out there for the same money or very little more.
You guys are making me feel bad. I have a Raspberry Pi, and it's just, I bought the most expensive aluminum case for it, but I barely use it. I mean, it has a distro on it, but I really need to put it to good use something. I haven't figured out what.
Well, like I said, I had my old Odroid, and B, you don't know this, I'm sure, but last August I had I guess it's the end of July, I had a cooking accident, a house fire, took all my electronics and everything else. So I lost the Odroid that I had to start over. But, the problem I had with it is it always seemed like, even though I wasn't restarting it very often, wasn't doing much to write to the SD card, because I had external drive plugged into it, you know, I stored everything on. it just seemed that I'd be going just fine with the distribution. All of a sudden, the SD card would become unavailable. I don't know if that's something they fixed. They do still sell at an additional premium an eMMC card that you could plug in for solid state storage to the old droid. And Dude Man, who was there earlier, has told me with the eMMC, he doesn't have that problem. So definitely, if anybody's looking at the old droids, I would recommend spending the extra money and getting that. But I keep trying to make them a general purpose computer, and the Raspberry Pi just isn't powerful enough for that. The old droid was for most cases, but at the time I had it, they hadn't sorted it on the Linux. On the Android side, they had the video driver sorted. They really didn't have the video driver sorted when I was using my Android on Linux, so I couldn't even though I had a quad core video card, I couldn't even really watch YouTube video with it. And again, I asked Dude Man this evening, and apparently they've got that worked out today. So yeah, that's one of the things I plan to do after the first of the year is grab one or more of the Odroids and replace the Raspberry Pi as the quote unquote media computer on this TV. Yeah, Riddlebox says in Oddcast Planet that Mumble's locked up on him, so I guess that's not why we're not hearing from him. If anybody is listening to the stream, we really could use a few more people in here in the Mumble conversation going.
I wonder if more people will show up, though. I mean, I don't know. Where are you from?
I'm in South Central Kansas. Riddlebox, since you can hear me, so I don't have to type, look for on your taskbar set of lips. Mumble will disappear and go down to the taskbar. That may be why you can't see it.
Wait, what are they trying to do?
I'm Riddlebox typed into IRC that he can't. He can still hear us, but he can't. He can't find his Mumble window. And I thought maybe it got minimized to the taskbar.
Yeah.
And it's quiet because I've got the. Yeah, it looks like Riddlebox back, and it's quiet on my end because I think I've dropped my DNS again, and I'm trying to work the problem on my system. So probably here after the hour, I'm going to jump out and jump back in again. And seriously, some of you slackers in Oddcast Planet, we really could use some help in here. See you lighting up, Dude Man, but we're just getting static. Does anybody hear me, or is it my end?
I hear you.
Okay, just making sure I was still connected. I have this weird, strange connectivity problem. Riddlebox, are you back with us?
No, but I am. Can you hear me this time?
Yes, I can.
My son had been using the computer, and he'd adjusted a few things.
Well, that always happens.
I was listening to you downstairs, and I thought I'd come up and join you. I heard your call for people to come and chat.
Well, thanks. It'd be nice to step away from the computer long enough to grab a bowl of cereal or something. But I'm good for now.
Are you going to be here all the time, 50? Are you trying to break a record and be here for 26 hours?
Well, actually, I think Claw 2 was on through the whole first show. Of course, it was only 12 hours. No, I can't. I've got to go out to the farm after lunch at least and run a few errands. That's why, like I said, folks, we could use some help in here because, past noon my time, Central Time, I'm going to be gone for probably at least 3 hours. Maybe past 1 o'clock, but I got to have three, four hours this afternoon. So somebody is going to have to jump in here and cover the dead air, which is usually not historically hasn't really been a problem on this podcast. Maybe everybody's tired of doing it. Maybe Ken was right. Answer your question, Honky. We've got about three people talking. If it's just two people talking, it's awful hard to step away from the machine. So Honky Magoo is asking me in the IRC how many people we have on. So, you know, I don't understand. Usually I jump into the podcast and I can't get it working edgewise. But I'm not used to being on this time of day. So maybe that's why. But I hope some more people are going to be interested in joining us later on.
Well, I almost jumped in earlier when Nightwise mentioned maybe he should start talking about food. And then he, and recipes, then he said that he burns even water. So I stayed away. I thought maybe no one's going to start talking about food.
Well, I was going to mention a site. I never got it done. Right now, I would like to say Happy New Year to Queensland, Australia. And again, five more. Why do we have five more? We don't. It doesn't say what they are. And Brisbane, Port Moresby, Guam. Is it and Carnes? I guess Carnes there. So Happy New Year's, folks. Okay, like I said, I'm going to have to set my Ethernet card.
Flying Rich.
Hello, Richard.
Or is he just flying by?
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good.
You're not mumble while flying, are you, Rich?
Say that again?
You're not flying right now, are you? Because that could be dangerous.
No.
Hey guys, I'm going to be right back. I've got to reset this NIC because right now I can't even update the notes. So talk amongst yourselves.
What's new, Rich? What's going on?
Yeah, I'm just getting spun up for the last day of work this year.
Ah, you have to work. That's a pain, eh?
Well, I don't know. I'm going to write in the timesheet I worked.
That's really work, yeah. Good one.
Now, if I could get my audio set up right here.
You're sounding good.
Yeah, but the audio is coming out of the speakers, not my headset.
Oh, I don't hear much echo at all, so it's all right.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll run with this then.
Well, unless it starts bothering you.
Yeah, it's I just hate traveling on New Year's Eve, and I'm having some people over, and we're going to hang out, by the fire pit and roast marshmallows, make s'mores. But it's going to be misty raining all day.
Was there someone else earlier talking about a zone minder? Are you still here, whoever that was?
Talking about what?
A zone minder, the webcam or IP cam app. There was someone here who was also using it.
Oh, Riddlebox. Yeah.
Ah, he's gone, has he?
Yeah, he must have been having trouble, so he must have dropped out again. I don't know if it's permanent. Yeah, let's say, he's having some issues with his laptop, he said. Since the stuff's locking up on him, so we've lost him for the time being. Yeah, coming back to our conversation, dude, man, he was saying what he uses Raspberry Pi for. He's just a cheap webcam plugged into it, and with the Raspberry Pi, he's using that on ZoneMinder. So I was thinking about that. Well, is that an alternative to using those IP cameras we were talking about? Yeah, the normal cheap he said the webcam he's using is a $50 one, Logitech, and he said the video on it is still pretty grainy. So you're probably, by the time you get your Raspberry Pi set up and plugged into a webcam, you're probably not saving very much money.
I think the other thing I thought about that with USB cameras, they might be a bit cheaper, but you're limited by cable length unless you use like an Ethernet adapter, to get longer runs, and by the amount of cameras. So if you want more than one or two cameras, I think the IP camera is a better way to go.
Right. I was just thinking of that you're not going to get much separation between your cameras if you just, say, plug three cameras into the Pi, or probably, like I said, more bang for the buck with the Odroid C1, then that's probably kind of a waste of the extra processing power.
I would suggest that the C1 is probably too underpowered if you want to connect a few cameras as well. If you want to do some detection, some motion detection and stuff like that.
Well, it's funny. I did get what is it? A Foscam and a TrendNet little R2D2 type dudes. The Foscam has the IR illuminators, which work okay in a room indoors. I don't know about outdoors how well they work. They're not outdoor cams, but I have an overhang out by the pool, and I figured it's never going to see water. It may see 99% humidity, but I was thinking about giving it a try out there. And I got a VM running on my XP netbook with ZoneMinder, and I upgraded to 128, but I haven't been able to get the motion control to work correctly.
And so you can move the camera around, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, and don't confuse that. So moving the camera around is one thing, and then the other thing is you can do motion detection and motion tracking. So when it sees an object moving, it will actually follow the object. So I've been up to my eyeballs and alligators in the new house setting stuff up here, and I was ready to set a bounty on a VM, like a 32-bit VM, so I can run it on my netbook. For ZoneMinder 128, and this way somebody has it set up and configured with the cams for me.
Can I interrupt you for a moment, please?
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.